Okay. This is what a radio show with a busted computer sounds like. Well, howdy. I'm Bob. This is The Horn. There's no intro tonight because the better part of the production machine is still not up and fully functional. No. It's more a case of,
Captain, I'll try to get it to you, but I'm holding the damn thing together with spit and baling wire. And she can't stand much more.
Yeah, you get the idea. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Ordinarily, you would have heard the intro by now, but, you know, when I press the magic button for that, it said file does not exist. Huh. How do you like that? Bless my soul. It's been a lovely day, sort of, here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God. It quit snowing, and the skies were just that deep, intense, infinitesimally blue that you get after like a big winter storm. Freezing cold, of course, but it warmed up a little bit, and some of the snow and some of the ice melted away. And so we had a decent day for a drive over to the hospital. Thank you for all the kind wishes. Doodle is back home, lighter to the tune of one gallbladder. She is resting somewhat comfortably. Right now we're staying ahead of the pain. She came through it like a champ. I guess it's one of those beautiful things about youth. But she had a really, really nasty gallbladder, and it's gone now. And so hopefully she will be feeling dramatically better dramatically soon. Like I said, I'm going to try to get through a program tonight. I worked on the computer all last night up until bedtime, and then fell asleep and worried about Doodle in my sleep until time to get up and worry about Doodle in my wakefulness. But, you know, that's what comes with being a parent. And those of you who are parents will know that you never stop worrying. And those of you who aren't parents have those about whom you will never stop worrying. So there you go. It's going to be a little bit weird tonight. That's all there is to it. But we'll find a way to get through. It's kind of hard not to talk about the lead story in the daggum country today. There are two lead stories: WikiLeaks and the hackers' revenge. And then there's the tax cut deal. You know how it was really frustrating the other day when we saw Barack Obama and he finally worked up some real righteous anger, but only so he could deliver it at the people who put him in office? Yeah. Well, apparently the Democrats in the House of Representatives found they've never been really that badly wanting in spying for a while. Granted, they did when it came to impeaching Cheney, Bush, thugs like that. But they found their spot. There was a downright rebellion today, wasn't there? Reuters reporting on it, noting angry Democrats in the House of Representatives defied President Barack Obama on Thursday and rejected a deal he struck with Republicans. And in listening to the coverage of this all day long, one thing I found interesting, that didn't really dawn on me, but no House Democrats were invited to participate in those negotiations, and no Senate Democrats either. It was just Republicans from the Senate and the House and the White House. That's kind of creepy, isn't it? Yes, it is. But apparently, behind closed doors, the Democrats were chanting, "Just say no." And they passed a non-binding resolution saying that they would not vote, the cave-in would not come up for a vote in the House, as far as they were concerned. Amy Brundage is a White House spokeswoman, and she said that the Obama administration remains confident that the major components of the deal will still survive after all the finagling and maneuvering. We can hope not. This was, as the Reuters story describes, This was a rebellion led by the liberal wing. That's the phrase they use. Obama must now quell an insurrection from the liberal wing of his own party. I'm just glad that, for what it is, that there was an insurrection. Aren't you? But I've been thinking a lot about this of late, and forgive me, this is just really weird operating. You get used to things when you do this, and not having an intro is just strange. I feel like the cold opening to Saturday Night Live, but I haven't found the part where I say, you know, live from the hills and hollers, it's Bob Kincaid with a broken computer. But no, I'll get through. I'm a little tired, too, to tell you the truth. I've been up since 5 o'clock this morning because we had to have Doodle over to the hospital at the butt crack of dawn. You know, apparently surgeons don't do that kind of thing late in the day. And so, you know, there we were. So I'm a little bit addled, but we will find our way through these 3 hours. I'm quite confident. But I have been thinking about this for the last couple of days. You know, I wasn't on the air last night, so we didn't have any prayer meeting, which left me feeling spiritually bereft, I might add. But, you know, these what we're talking about, and it was very interesting listening to National Public Radio on the way back home this afternoon. NPR, for some reason or another, decided that it would be wise to have the Plaid Avenger. Credit for that going to our good buddy Luke. The Plaid Avenger, Tennessee's senior senator, Lamar Alexander. NPR decided that he would just be the guy to talk to about the whole tax cut kerfuffle. And the minute, I forget who it was that was interviewing him, but the minute that she said the tax cuts, he said, no, I beg to differ. These are not tax cuts. We're just keeping taxes the same. Letting these things expire would be the most massive tax increase in the history of the nation. Oh, they've been working at their framing, haven't they? Why, yes, they have. She persistently called them tax cuts, and he got a little uppity with her after a while. You keep calling them tax cuts, but I got to disagree. But it did get me to... And then, again, because I wasn't on the air last night, as I was sitting here slaving away over a hot set computer, I had the chance to watch a little bit of Lawrence. I watched Rachel Maddow's program, and frankly, she probably should have earned an Emmy for what she did last night with that disgusting bigoted thug from Uganda that she kept that she interviewed. Hollywood. What they're doing is they are. Oh, they are recruiting our children to be homosexuals. And she kept saying, well, how is that? How are they? Oh, because they are recruiting, and they're giving money away. Well, can you provide any details? I will happily provide you details. I will send them to you in your, your email. No, she really should have, because... She was doing some real-life, honest-to-Jesus journalism there. And it was more than a little bit fascinating. But anyway, after that, along comes Lawrence O'Donnell, who apparently had his maiden forms in a total bunch. Because he had a little panel on that featured, Ezra Klein and some other balding, geeky-looking guy. And and one of the other panelists was Alan Grayson. And Lawrence O'Donnell lit into Alan Grayson for opposing this cave-in like a duck jumping on a June bug. It was almost kind of pathetic. Lawrence O'Donnell really, really embarrassed himself in that process. But the venom that he was literally screaming at Alan Grayson. And I couldn't help but be taken just a little bit aback by that. But all of this combines to uh, all of this combines to create a scenario where I can't help just thinking about the big picture, more than just the minutia of the current cave-in. You know, it was, Monday night? Tuesday night. It was Tuesday night we talked a little bit about Pearl Harbor. As a kid growing up, because I had World War II and Depression-era parents, I actually saw, and I don't know whatever became of them, sad, I actually saw World War II ration books. And some of you have probably heard the phrase, I'm down to my last red cent. Well, those were actually ration tokens, little ration pennies, and they were not metal because of the need to conserve metal in the coinage. They were some kind of hard cardboard or some such, but I've seen those. And in the course of the tax cut expiration discussion, and frankly, it's been more Lawrence O'Donnell than any kind of discussion. A lot of emotion, a whole lot of heat, not a lot of light. I got to thinking, because you know, who with a passion for history can't help thinking in this way? You think back to the Second World War, and you know what this country went through, and you know how this country sacrificed as one. You know, tires, gasoline, food, everything was subject to rationing so as to perpetuate the possibility of our ultimate dedication to ultimate victory over the fascist foe. And it was rich people and poor people and middle-class people, all of whom sacrificed together to make it go, to make the war effort succeed. Nobody liked it to the extent that no one likes privation, but by the same token, nobody wanted to lose to the Axis fascist powers either, and see the long, dark, miserable night of fascism forever shut out the lights of civilization around the world. And I got to thinking about this when I heard Lawrence O'Donnell screaming at Alan Grayson, who takes the biggest bite? Who gets hit the hardest with these if these tax cuts expire? It's the poor, Senator Representative Congressman Grayson. It's the poor. Because the lowest rate goes from 10% to 15%. On a percentage basis, it's true. But by no stretch of the imagination can you suggest that the poor are the ones who would pay the most, dollar for dollar. You see. And as he sat there screaming, I couldn't help beginning to wonder what would have happened if this climate had obtained in the opening days, the waning days of 1941 and the opening days of 1942. The poor went in their droves into the military, probably in higher percentage numbers than the well-to-do. And they died, many of them, you see. I gotta stop saying you see. But it was a shared effort. And perhaps out of all of this, that is what we're finding out, that America is no longer capable, of a shared effort. because that is how thoroughly we have become divided. And it is a sad commentary on where we stand. It is pitiable, because it means that if we ever have to win that fight again, the likelihood of it happening is significantly diminished. But we have domestic enemies now. Remember, against all enemies, foreign and domestic? The oath even contemplates domestic enemies. And they are rampant in the streets now. Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck, the Beckerhead, who has declared if you're a white American citizen, you're pretty much toast, because the House of Representatives passed the DREAM Act that provides a path of legalization for the children of undocumented immigrants, the children of them, people who had no choice, no say-so in the matter. Wingnuts are having a hissy. Yeah, if you're a white American citizen, you're pretty much toast, says Glenn Beck. Maybe we'll go to that audio at some point. But I want to get to the core of this thought, if I could. The tax cuts that are expiring will send this country back to the Clinton-era tax rates. Those were anything but confiscatory. There is nothing to suggest that those were not, a significant contributor to the economic expansion that the Clinton era experienced. The rich will do just fine paying those rates. They will not have to go from lobster every day to lobster every other day. It'll still be lobster every day. The market for hummingbird tongue canapes will not dry up. It might even expand. But the question is, at what point are we going to begin to frame this in patriotic terms? I don't have the historical data. If any of you care to look for it and find it and send it back to me, I welcome it. But when World War II's rationing went on, did the whole right wing stand up and scream en masse, "Oh hell no, we won't sacrifice. It's for the rest of you to sacrifice"? Is that it? Did they do that? I don't know. I'd like to suspect that they didn't. I do know that the right wing and the Republican Party largely behaved in treasonous fashion leading up to World War II. That's just a fact. But no, I think it was in large part the American people entered into that struggle and that sacrifice willingly, wholeheartedly, and in unity. And so I put the question, is there any way to define returning to the Clinton-era tax cuts as a matter of patriotism? And if there is, why aren't we working on it? Why aren't we saying, we love our country that much? We love our country enough to give up, and by we, I mean the poor. And the poorly compensated. We love our country enough to give up whatever that extra 5% is, if it will make this country whole again. And we would like to know why it is that the Wall Streeters and the banksters and the insurance industries and the rich generally aren't patriotic enough. We'd like to know that. We'd like to know why it is that America isn't worth, you know, for a person with $1 million of income, why America isn't worth a pissant $20,000. Why isn't it worth it? because there's a lot of blood on a lot of ground all around the world that was spilled on the principle that it is, that we are, that this nation is worth it. That's why we call it the supreme sacrifice. And I want to know why we're not messaging on it. And I want to know why it is that we are not painting the right wing as the treasonous bastards that they are, who do not love this country, who do not care if it all falls down around them. I want to know why. Because ultimately that's what we're talking about. It was the same people who got the Bush tax cuts in the first place who created the housing bubble, who created the collapse of the economy with which, whose ramifications we are still dealing with. Why can't they pay when we are willing to? That might be the only way to shame and scare the right wing into shutting up at least a little bit. We are patriotic enough to support our country. It's a failure of framing. It really is. It's a failure of messaging. Taxes, 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 taxes. It's not taxes. It is supporting your country. No less than going to war. We are willing to support our country. Why aren't they? Because, see, I know how it feels to have that dropped on your head day in and day out. Well, you don't support the Iraq war, and there's going to be mushroom clouding. Why do you hate America? By God, it's about time we figured out that two can play at that game, and we damned well better pick up the dice and start rolling. It is worth it to me, I don't know about to you, but it is worth it to me to go back to the Clinton-era tax rates in the hope of correcting some of the massive amount of harm that flowed out of those ill-advised, ill-gotten, ill-conceived tax cuts that were shoved through during the nightmare years of the Bush administration. What do you think? You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Let's go to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Is this me?
That's you.
Yep, and they were passed through reconciliation, if you remember.
I do, yeah, absolutely. Good you would mention that.
Yes. And, well, I like very much what you had to say. And that's exactly the way I feel about it. To hell with them. Let them all expire. I can live with that. And, you made some very good points there. And, I called to talk about this tax cut thing and all that. I wasn't really prepared for your take on it, which I think is very good and all that. But, to me, a very significant thing happened in the House today with them rejecting, saying they're not even going to bring this up to vote for in its current form. When I listen to everybody and listen to, how terrible Obama is and what a terrible decision and he sold us out and he blah, 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 and all that stuff, believe me, I'm not real happy either. But then, I also think I sure as hell would hate to be sitting in that seat. That decision.
Yeah, the last 2 weeks have reminded me that the last time I thought about wanting to be president of the United States, I was about 5.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, who the hell, look at the responsibility. I mean, look what he's talking about. Millions of people going without employment. Everybody's taxes going up. And there's other stuff in there, too. I'd hate to have to make that decision. But what happened today in the House is what has got to happen. Everybody wants Obama to fight. Well, he needs some damn fighters behind him, too. You know, you can't take on the other army all by yourself. You got to have troops with you, too. And look what the Democrats have done to him. I mean, this whole damn election cycle. How many Democrats ran on the accomplishments of the Obama administration?
As compared to how many ran away from him. Right.
You know, so, in my opinion, that, you know, build a damn army. If you guys stand up, maybe you'll give the president some...
breathing space?
Gonads, well, I don't know, whatever. You know, some guts. I mean, if every, you know, if people are going to stand together, like I said, it's the first time these people really came out and like they're going to fight for something, for Christ's sakes. And you remember the election. Now, you know, I'm right on the election. Everybody ran away. Nobody wanted to talk about health care. Some people didn't even want Obama to come in their state.
Some people took out guns and shot and talked about Obama while shooting guns.
Right. You know, so, you know, the man needs some people behind him. And, you know.
Well, do you think, Wayne, that maybe this gives him a little bit of that cover?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, he's a Democrat. He's, you know, whether he likes it or not, he's the head of the Democratic Party. You know, and I mean, it's even during the election and how, well, you know, he became the most liberal senator in the Senate. You know, I mean, that's, you know how they use that one.
That's just like the envelope.
The nominee is the, you know, most liberal and all that. And I mean, you know, the unfortunate thing about that is I think some liberal people bought that too.
Not this one.
No, nor I. You know, but I don't know. I think that I was really glad to see the House's action today. I think that's excellent. And, you know, I, for one, will join you on going to, you know, let them all expire, man. I'm willing to do my part. I always have been willing, you know. And, I mean, you know, I told you, man, even like, you know, when I was young and my brother had this big job with ABC News and everything, it, you know, I always had to hear from my father how much my brother paid in taxes that year, and generally it was more than I made, you know.
Right.
And, I mean, I used to always think, man, I wished I had to pay more taxes.
Yeah, because it generally means you're doing...
you make more goddamn money.
Yeah, you're doing better.
How hard is that? I mean, I don't understand, you know. And these damn rich people and these... But, I mean... Well, you know, like you say, it ain't going to be lobster every other day. You know, they're not going to miss.
Well, and what I and as I was babbling along, Wayne, the thing that keeps coming back to me and sort of bubbling to the top is they made this problem. This problem was not made by the $15,000 a year crowd.
No, it was not. No, it was not.
It's the bubble boys and the banksters and the insurance people. You know, the people, that story I had from the New York Times a few days ago that referred to the typical Wall Street worker who will receive a $1 million bonus. You can't use typical worker and $1 million bonus in the same sentence. You can't.
No, you cannot.
But they are they're the rotten SOBs who made this problem. And we're going to extend their tax rates for them as a reward? I mean, we were all kids once, Wayne.
I know.
You know, when you broke mother's lamp, did mother go buy another lamp and say, break that one too? That's what this is.
Exactly. And I think here's a disturbing thought for people to think about. This tax cut for Rush Limbaugh means a $2,600,000+ tax break for a year, for the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For 2 years. And then when those 2 years are up, for another 10 or forever.
Well, it'll get bigger as he makes more millions, too. You know.
Great how that works.
Yeah, this much percent of 50 million is, you know, ain't as much as this much, the same percent of 80 million.
You know, hey, Rush, you know, you don't want to pay taxes? Go to Haiti. Go to Somalia. Broadcast live from the Somali Command Center.
Yeah.
Of course, you'll be spending a little bit of money building your own private army to protect your lardy, well, you know what I mean.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. But anyway.
The one question, though, Wayne, and you know, everybody knows your field of endeavor. The one thing I'd like to see come out of this little bit of rebellion in the House, mostly they were talking about the estate tax, but I'd like to see them actually demand that unemployment compensation be uncoupled from the tax cuts for the rich, because they are not the same thing. There is no natural reason for unemployment to be tied to giving a break to Paris Hilton or Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Glenn Beck.
Well, and that's exactly right, and that's why the president is so correct in saying that the Republicans are holding the American people hostage. That is exactly what they're doing.
You see, I believe
why is that so hard to see?
If the Republicans leave the unemployed hanging out to dry, sooner or later they're going to start sweating. Because sooner or later they're going to realize that the majority in 2010 could evaporate pretty quickly at the ends of pitchforks and torches by people who will go vote.
Oh, and that's, I'm looking very forward to seeing that and being part of it, for that matter. For that matter, I mean, well, oh, my God. Well, today, do you see what they did today? They killed...
Don't ask, don't tell?
No, a bill for to help the first responders, 9/11 first responders. I think it was $13 billion or something.
How can the Republican Party behave so rottenly, so meanly, so dastardly, so hard-heartedly, Wayne? How can they behave that way and we wind up losing?
I don't know. I mean, it's really confusing. It's really confusing to be quite. I mean, you know, just think about that. I mean, they're supposed to be, you know, they're all the patriots and shit. But here, you know, we're going to deny health care to all the people that fought during 9/11, that ran into burning buildings trying to rescue people, that worked in all that stuff trying to recover bodies. We're going to deny them health care because we want tax cuts for the rich.
And see, that's Rachel Maddow pointed to. She took that. You heard that old saying allegedly from Gandhi. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. She turned that on its head the other night and said that Barack Obama is in severe danger of being rendered irrelevant. And the thing is, the way to avoid that is to get out and use the bully pulpit. Get out there and be mean. Don't invite the Johnny on the spot press corps in. Call the TV station, call the network, say, I've got something to say. And if you have to do it every day till they stop taking your feed, do it. Press it. Push it. And you get that. I get that.
And like I'm saying, you also have to have a lot of people out there saying the same thing. The people that now are so excited in the House fighting, they have to give the guy, you know, they got to have his back.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And, too many of them don't, but.
Well, I'm sure you've seen Lewis Black from time to time on Comedy Central. He's hilarious.
Absolutely love him.
He's got a quote out there. He said, when a very rich man pays $15,000 to $18,000 more in taxes, he's still a very rich man.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right. I don't know, buddy. But it looks like it's going to get interesting. Anyway, so I certainly hope so. They don't just turn around and fold. But we will see. Won't be the first time.
No.
You know, this shit ain't going to get no better. I mean, you wait to see how they come after us, unions and shit.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be inundated with right-to-work legislation in states that aren't right-to-work, anti-prevailing wage laws, let's get rid of all public sector unions or public employee unions.
Well, I saw a story just a couple of days ago, Wayne, suggesting that part you mentioned there is an actual tactic. The right wing wants to drive states into bankruptcy so that they will then be able to break the public employees' unions.
Right. I don't doubt that. They are ruthless. They are absolutely ruthless. So we will see, my good man.
All right.
But I'll be talking to you later.
All right. I'll talk to you later, man.
Okay, boy.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Boss Man Wayne. About 25 minutes before the hour, on we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bobby, my Big East brother.
Hey, what's happening?
Not much. This is Corey, and let me say one thing right now. I sent you an email earlier today about the a new iPhone app that lets you connect with Google Voice.
Yeah, I saw that email, actually, while we were sitting there waiting for Doodle's recovery.
So I want to know right now, how am I sounding right now?
Right now, you're a little bit hot and crunchy.
Okay, now let me adjust my headset here because I'm talking to you through my iPhone. Is this any better?
Yes, it sounds like it is.
Okay. I know you missed prayer meeting Wednesday yesterday, and I have to let the listeners know. I'm sure you all heard about the ARC puck that's being built, unfortunately, out in Commonwealth.
In fact, I had a little low-rent hissy about it one night, but yeah.
Yeah, I just want to let all your listeners know, no one in the state of Louisville supports this thing. We all recognize it for what it is. It is a cash grab. It is an embarrassment. I mean, we already rank, 45th or worse in education right now, in a state where our slogan when you enter the state says, "Welcome to Kentucky, where education pays." Yeah, right.
Oh yeah, that's rich.
Yeah, I also want to talk about the Obama and his caving. When I first heard this news announced, I was at work, and frankly, I'm glad I was at work because I probably would have been screaming some obscenities. How in the world can this man do this? He is essentially giving away $700 billion, is it, over 10 years, when we seriously can't afford to give away $700 billion? I mean, I'm all for debt reduction, stuff like that, but I would rather have taxes go up to pay for it than borrow money that we can't afford to pay this thing off. I mean, with this proposed tax.
Well, Corey, this thing just exposes every level of right-wing hypocrisy because what you say is exactly right. And, the right-wingers are out there saying, well, we can't raise the debt ceiling because that's putting debt onto unborn generations of human lives, Americans, and it just ain't right. But by the same token, if we want to do it by doing a tax cut, extending tax cuts for the richest of the rich, well, that's just dandy.
Speaking of debt ceilings, have you heard Rand Paul Lipton, phenomenologist, lately? He's sounding like he's going to go ahead and vote to raise the debt ceiling.
Oh, he probably will, because he has been taken, yea, verily, unto that high mountain place and been shown the world in all its dominions.
Oh, my God. I also like to apologize to the listeners for the stupidity out in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, because just letting you know, the state of Louisville did not vote for this man. The state of Louisville actually has common sense thinkers, people who actually can see the world around them. We voted for Jack Conway, 55, 45, something like that. But, head stopping gets votes, what can I say?
I think he'll need to secede. and you should put Hunter S. Thompson and Muhammad Ali on your flag.
Yes, the state of law and the Commonwealth of Kentucky are two entirely different things. The state hates the Commonwealth hates our guts. Never mind the fact that we essentially drive the state engine. They hate our guts. They would rather see Louisville fail than see the state prosper and by proxy Louisville prosper. They hate that. I mean, we have a brand new, beautiful 22,000 seater in downtown Louisville. By the way, when your Mountaineers come in and will get beat, they'll love the surroundings because it's an NBA arena. But that arena downtown has done so much for the city. I mean, people are saying, oh, no, we can't have an arena. It would be too expensive. It'll never get paid for. But by all accounts, people are going downtown. It's a revitalized downtown. People are actually spending money downtown. The arena is getting paid for. The arena is helping Louisville. The arena will help the state of Kentucky out in the long run. And yet, people are hating on it, mainly because it's in Louisville.
Right, because there is not a concomitant degree of outrage over the people of the Commonwealth of Kentucky ponying up, what was it you told me, maybe it was our buddy Dennis, $37 million to build the Ark experience?
Oh, yeah. We have no problem building a creationist on the religious park, but damn you, what the hell, or whatever, should an Islamic park be building that? No, we can't have that. We can't have the damn Muslims coming in and invading our liberty. We can't have that. Because, you know, terrorists, you know, they won't come steal your guns.
Right, you know, and if we don't build the Ark Park, the terrorists win, right?
Yeah, also, just let you know, the Creationism Museum, it was not built with tax dollars, state tax dollars. It was all privately funded. And I'm going to say something that is, you know, kind of controversial thinking, me being an atheist and all, but if the religious funding freaks out in the Commonwealth and want to build the Ark Park, fine.
Pass the plate, buy the land, but don't ask. No. Surely to God, Corey, there's going to be litigation over this.
I hope so, because if there is, I'm looking to join it myself, because I don't want any of my money going to any religious park, period, end of story. I don't care who it is, Wahhabi, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, Wicca, Druidism, paganism, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monsterism, no.
Yeah, I do not want my money going to this park.
Well, see, Corey, I go back to the late, great Sam Kennison, who said he wanted to be there on Judgment Day when Jerry Falwell showed up so he could see Jesus look at him and say, where did I say to build a water slide?
Yeah, him and Al Mohler, too. We are also home of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary.
Oh, yeah. That's in Louisville, isn't it?
That is in Louisville.
Ooh. Well, Corey, I got to roll on, but we will work some more with this technology. It's got a few bugs to be worked out of it, but it could be a real handy thing for folks to reach the program with. What's the name of the iPhone app again?
It is called Talk to One, something like that. I found it on Gizmodo.com. It'll just type in Talk to Tone, TALKTAONE. I think it is. Y'all give that a try.
Okay, will do. Yeah, Talk to Tone, TALKTATONE, and it basically lets your iPhone work via the internet telephony, so you're not burning minutes. Corey, thanks a million. I look forward to hearing from you again.
Yes, sir. I may go up to see y'all up there and watch a game.
Oh, that'd be too much fun. You know, the LSU's coming up next fall. That could be a real blast.
But then again,
you know, Coach Luther will probably still be here. So, you know, there's always that whole dynamic tension of watching him snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
I sincerely apologize for not coming through and pacing his ass for you when came up here.
It would have helped. But then again, Pitt owes us more, really. They were favored by, 2.5 and lost by 25? Yeah, mail it in.
I've got an epic seal on both sidelines.
Take care, Corey.
See you, man.
Bye now.
Bye.
Corey calling from the Free State of Louisville. And that it is a fascinating application. If you've got an iPhone, maybe check it out, and we'll. And basically, it connects with Google Talk. You can find it at Gizmodo.com. It's called Talk to One. TalkToTone. Talk to Tone. I'm sorry. Talk to Tone. TalkToTone. And let's. Wow, you guys have got it busy tonight. Let's find out what's next. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Well, hey, what's up?
Oh, nothing much. How you been?
I've been pretty good. How about you?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. Just listening to the show last couple of days, I wanted to get my little input into the this little tax thing.
Oh, by all means.
Going on. the early call said, you know, you can have the best quarterback, first-round draft pick. You know how I love analogies.
Yes.
First-round draft pick, star quarterback, Cam Newton type. He can give speeches, his perfect spirals. But if you don't have an offensive line that can block for him, you're going to get sacked. If you don't have receivers that can catch that ball when you throw out that agenda and take it to the end zone, you're not going to win the game. And that's what, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you're Obama supporter. I said, no, I don't have a problem with Obama. I never had, really had a problem with Obama. My problem has always been with the Democratic Party and the way it functions. They are a bunch of freaking cowards. Let's look at the facts. The facts of the matter is this. Even the White House, now granted, they probably should have pushed them more, told them to put this on as an election agenda. They wouldn't do it. They wanted to run away from it because they were scared what's going to happen to the election.
Oh, no doubt about it. You know, Wayne was right. Wayne was right when he observed. You know, how many House candidates campaigned on the successes they've had as opposed to just, you know, running like hell from Barack Obama. I will not argue over that.
Yeah. Now I don't think any Democrat can be happy over this deal because if that's the Holy Grail to them, then it's the Holy Grail to us. Not giving it to them, you know. So I don't think any core Democrat is happy about it. And I really don't think Obama's happy about it. I think he deep down didn't want to do it, but I think he's being honest in some degree to what he felt like he had to do and looking at the political situation. And I think a lot of that anger that I saw coming out the other day from him really probably was from some frustration. I don't know necessarily at the left, but I think it's just a core the way they operate because even during the healthcare debate, I remember Obama was very, very strong on the public option. Yeah, we're going to have this and that. Then I noticed when the Democrats started like waffling on it, mid the Ben Nelsons, all these other people, he seems to come, oh, well, you know, the public option isn't like this, you know, this and this and that. Now, granted, maybe you should have got somebody in the corner, pulled their heads over and said, look, you're going to do this. Everybody can talk about that. But the fact of the matter is, it still is that core, those blue dog Democrats, Rahm Emanuel types, you know, who were pushing a corporatist XYZ agenda that has been kind of like the hallmark of, you know, that took over pretty much the Obama administration. And whether he's to blame for that to some degree, I say no, because it's been in the, look, I was working at DNC. The DLC and all those Clintonites, they're all corporatists, it's always been there. It is just a pop up. So, and the fact the way they're acting now, I mean, just like Carl said.
Well, let me ask one question though, because if there is a grand strategic failure in all of this, freezing out Democrats strikes me as being it, because the negotiations were entered to between the president, John Boehner, and of all people, Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell doesn't have a majority in the Senate. Why was Mitch McConnell part of it? I mean, let's say you want to negotiate with the people that are going to be leading the incoming Congress. Well, then you invite John Boehner and you invite Harry Reid, right?
I think I can give you that answer. Ineffective. I think you think those people are ineffective. I think Harry Reid's been ineffective. Nancy Pelosi, you know, I think he kind of knows where, and we know she's effective. But Harry Reid, I mean, look at the health care. We lost the public option, really, in my opinion, because of Harry. Why can't he get his people, the Ben Nelsons and all these other people, you know, to get in line with what the House is doing? The progressive, I mean, of course the House is more progressive. But in general, why couldn't he do it? So he maybe called in the people in the room who thought he could get the job done. You know, I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm just saying.
No. If we take that as a given, then do you think he didn't realize that that would be seen as a profound snub?
I think there's some snubbing going on by Obama, no doubt. I don't know if it's the, you know, and I'm not into the whole Obama chess thing. I don't think that's the case. I think this thing is too fluid for that. You can't just play chess with this kind of situation. It's too many, like, crazy variables. But maybe there's something that will help, you know. If they don't want to play the game right, then I'm just going to make deals with Republicans and see how they like that. I don't know. But all I'm looking at this, I honestly believe this, that right now we're backed in the corner. Because what they should have done earlier was put this on as Election Day issue, and then the people would have had to either vote on it. And if they came out the same way and voted on it, and Dems got kicked out and you lost seats, well, then now you know. And people get what they get, you know. But I think it's kind of, to me it's just hypocritical for the Democrats not to be, oh, you know, we're outraged. And then they were running during the whole, you know, last year or two from Obama. So okay, now he goes and does something behind your back, and now you're supposedly behind your back. I don't think it was really behind their back. I think they knew it. I just think they see it's an opportunity to score political points with their base. You know, that's just my, you know, personal opinion on it. You know, again, I'm not happy about it. I think Obama should have fought more in a number of different cases. But
well, the thing that bothers me more
is it exists before he comes in there.
The thing that bothers me more than anything else is the artificial conjunction between unemployment benefits and the tax cuts for the rich. Again, I say that they did not have to be conjoined, but it was forcibly done. And that's a level of hostage taking that is it's intolerable.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing: that we always get outflanked by the Republicans. Right now, like, you know, you're talking about them, you know, the whole thing with the fire, you know, denying. That's what we should be talking about. We could be having outrage by that, but what we're talking about is a fight between Dems and Obama. We should be talking about, hey, these guys are going to cut your unemployment benefit. These guys are cutting. It is ridiculous that, you know, that this is the fight that we're having right now. And if Obama's got to take the blame, I think he should. But the House Democrats just can't walk away and say, hey, well, you know, it's all on him. You know, it's bullshit.
No, but I don't think they're walking away. This is far from over. This is them saying that they want to be part of the process. This is them saying that,
I want them to block it. I want them to block it. Do what you say you're going to do, Bob. Don't like, oh, we're going to do it. Then they're going to cave in at the end. If you're against the bill, block the bill. I'm fine with that. They block the bill. Personally, block it. I mean, I hate to see people lose. You know, I know some people are probably going to hurt, but if that's what
But the people who are going to hurt are already hurting. And that's a very important thing to bear in mind in this issue, is the fact that the 13 weeks of unemployment, the so-called extension, the extra, it ain't extra. There's no tier five. The 99ers still don't get diddly. They're still flat broke. This is just 13 more weeks next year for anybody who happens to still fall, you know, still has less than 99 weeks. This is the 99ers are still done for.
But we couldn't tax the rich. We couldn't tax the rich, you know. So I'm saying that if that outrage, I'm not even arguing with you about it. I mean, I think we're all outraged. But I'm saying that Democrats can't get off saying, well, you know, we're outraged, and then they don't do anything. And I hear what they're talking about. They're doing this revolt until I see them block something. You know what I'm saying? Until I see them stop, they didn't stop the public option. They didn't stop the health care bill. Until they actually do something, I can say that, okay, now they're drawing the line. They can't, to me, they're just like Obama. They, you know, the line keep moving, you know? I mean, you know what I'm saying, kind of, or no?
No, I do know. We've got, the math on the fly is never my strong suit, but we got basically 21 days to see what they'll do, and And, you know, they don't want to work Christmas either. Remember, the Republicans are coming in, and the one thing we know is that they will draw their breath and their pay, but they don't like to show up to work.
You got
so,
Mac, you got Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean, there's a lot of stuff coming up that could be taken care of if we, you know, if this had been out of the way. You know, now we're back into a corner at the last minute because, again, they didn't make this a summer issue, you know, so... I think there's a lot of blame to go around. They ain't just on Obama. It's a whole Democratic Party. They got issues. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Good to hear from you, Gary. And don't be such a stranger. It's been too long.
Okay. Yeah. All right, man.
All right. You take care. Bye now. There is more than enough blame to go around on this. And it didn't have to be this way. The most brilliant breakdown of this... You know, it was the night before last night, and of course everything went sideways last night. But the special comment that Keith Olbermann offered was profound. But the breakdown of the things that Obama said he got from the Republicans, those were things the Republicans said they wanted in the first place, and Rachel did a brilliant job laying that out. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, Tony?
Yeah, I'm sorry I caught you so much, but this...
Oh, no, not at all.
Before I get started, first of all, that line that you said about Sam Kinison, I remember asking you to build a water slide. That was a great line, because it really said everything about, you know, these guys and how they take money from people, you know?
Right, and now they're going to build an ARC theme park with taxpayer dollars. Somebody has got to file a lawsuit. They just have to.
Yeah, also, the name Doodle, right?
Yeah, Doodle.
I love that name. Did you come up with her, or did your wife?
She just became Doodle from the moment she was born.
That's a great name, man.
We nickname everyone and everything. She's the Doodle Bug.
When you grew up in L.A., you didn't really have a name Doodle too much. But anyway, I want to throw this story out to you and tell me what you think about the working class as opposed to the rich people. I don't know how you came up, but most people that work for a living... For lack of a better word, everything wasn't handed to him.
Right.
I don't know how you came up, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yes. I pushed, as a kid, a lawnmower all over my neighborhood, mowing lawns for, you know, $2 or $3 a lawn.
Well, so, then you'll understand what I'm trying to say here. I think that rich people, especially second-generation people and people that work in Wall Street, because if you think about it, most companies that make the most money are companies where you don't see hard labor. It's usually an office with phones and people pushing stuff, papers around. You never see, like the actual bottom floor of the business. They make money, but nothing like these big fancy offices.
No, those guys who make the typical Wall Street worker who will make $1 million bonus, that sentence that drove me so crazy the other night, and I think it's a fair question, what does that person do that's worth not $1 million, because that's just the bonus. What does that person do? It's all just little bites of money taken off of transactions over time, isn't it?
Yes, I do. I also think that, and I know you've seen this before, and I'm venturing to say you've done it because I know I have. You'll be walking through the parking lot coming from a grocery store. You'll be walking out to your car, and some guy will go that you've never met before. They'll say, "Hey, man, you wouldn't happen to have a jack? I have a flat." Or, "Do you have some jumper cables? I have a spare." You're going to help him. I'm going to help him.
Sure.
The average working class person will go, "Where you at?" "Okay, hang on. I'll be right there," right? And if it's a woman and she doesn't know how to change a tire, you'll change a tire for her and not expect any money for it. And the guy will offer you money and say, "Oh, man, it's cool. Don't sweat it." Right?
Right.
Okay. I think the working class, they've grown up with everything handed to them. They don't understand what it is.
You mean the wealthy class?
Yeah, the wealthy class. My bad. I think that they've never had to experience that. They've never asked to ask anybody for help because they pay people to do it. I think that they don't know what that is, and that's why they act the way they do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Because they are truly the entitlement class. See, when you and I talk about what we owe to America, that goes back to John Kennedy saying, Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Well, see, the Wall Street class doesn't ask what they can do for their country. They are the welfare queens of this culture. They really, really are, Tony, because they feel like they are entitled to what they have.
It's like you'll be working a labor job and your buddy's right next to you, and you both, let's say, like, I used to work for a produce company. We used to have unload lettuce trucks. You ain't live till you hump the truck of lettuce. You know what I mean? They come in 40 to 60 pound crates, and you got to stack them. So you work with the guy next to you. You work as a team because you're both trying to accomplish the same thing, and you both have the same job. Remember that movie Trading Places with Eddie Murphy?
Oh gosh, yes.
Okay, remember when Dan Aykroyd had to do a little bit of, he hit a road bump and he tried to ruin his life? Every one of his friends turned against him.
True.
As soon as he ran into a little bit of hard luck, they didn't even know the guy. But if that had been you, once again, I mean, I don't live next door to you, but if I was your neighbor and I came over and said, hey, man, you got a lawnmower I can borrow, you would help. Those guys don't understand what it is. Their whole thing is, you know, if you can't do anything for me, then...
Well, no, they've got someone to do that for them.
That's exactly.
You know, at their homes in the Hamptons, Tony, they don't say, could I borrow your lawnmower? They say, could I borrow the fellow who mows your lawn?
Okay, for example, money, right? When you talk about money. Those guys never see actual hard currency. So for them, cutting taxes or doing this or that, it's something they don't see. Most rich people, they don't even carry money around. They carry plastic. Me, you, we work for a living once again. That's why $100 to us in cash is a lot of money. $100 to them is some unknown figure on a card. And when you don't see it, then you don't understand the value of it. You know what I'm saying?
All true.
That, to me, that's what I think. I'm going to change the subject if it's okay.
Go right ahead.
I might be a little bit out of this. If I'm wrong on this fact, you can correct me. Alan Grissom, did he get voted out?
Grayson?
Did he lose?
Oh, he didn't just lose. He got stomped.
Let me ask you a question. How does that guy lose? He was one of our soldiers.
Well, for starters, he came from a district that had been Republican since Lincoln.
I know, but... He was
secondly, because he got on the floor and spoke truth to power and told things the way they were and, you know, did the die now thing, the Republicans painted a giant target on him. And they spent money beating him that they wouldn't have spent to save John Boehner's seat, Tony.
What I don't understand is we don't have a lot of warriors out here, right? We're not really being represented. How did we allow that guy? I mean, that dude took those guys to task. How do we allow that guy to lose? I mean, we need a guy. We need guys like him. Every time we lose, I mean, they have thousands. We have one of him to 100 of those. Every time we lose one of our guys like him, it's like them losing 100 people. We don't have a lot of guys like that. I mean, I don't understand how we could lose his voice. You know what I mean? I hear what you're saying about the district, but losing him was a real hard thing. Because we need guys like that.
That's the truth. But if there's an upside out of it, they had, like I said, they had to spend a fortune to do it. He had a couple of miscues that did not play well inside his electorate. But more than anything else, the rest of the Progressive Caucus did pretty much just fine, and that's why they were able to stage this palace coup, if you will, today over the cave-in.
Yeah, that's true. You're right about that. I'm going to ask you a couple more things. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you were doing a story the other day, the fires in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, or correct my facts. The Palestinians went in and helped them put the fire out, correct?
Yes. So did Turkey. So did Jordan. So did Egypt.
Were they firemen or were they working class?
No, they were firefighters.
Well, the firefighters came in. I haven't seen that on the news.
Well, of course not.
Once again, turn the situation around. If Israel would have came in and did that to us and helped us, it would have been all over the news.
Sure it would have.
And I will bet you, if the Palestinians came in, I bet you some of them were branches of Hamas. I bet you Hamas came in to help them without telling them they were Hamas, but you won't hear that.
Well, I mean, money's money, and there were fire trucks, so there was probably some Hamas money involved.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
but you won't hear a word about that. I was looking on some websites, and it looks like unemployment's down a little bit. Not much, but it's going down, which is a good sign. A couple more things. I wrote them down here so I wouldn't forget. Where do we stand with Don't Ask, Don't Tell? Because I thought I read something about the Democrats.
They couldn't get it. They couldn't get it past the filibuster today.
Really?
Yeah, and one of those things. You know, I owe the nation an apology because my senator Joe Manchin was the only Democrat who crossed the line to vote with the godforsaken bigots of the right wing.
Why?
Well, why? He declared that he said he couldn't do it because he was afraid it might negatively impact the ability of the military to have chaplains.
Oh my God! Are you kidding me?
Here's the quote: "They don't believe that it should be invoked at a point of time when they're engaged in combat because it would be a hard transition for them. So if someone's trying to push that through with a vote quicker, it might not be prudent. I'm not sure if the votes would be there to do that. Do the clergy believe that this makes it harder for them to do the mission that they believe in, which is preaching the gospel and the Bible as they believe, or does it kind of give them a pause, if you will?"
Oh, that's ridiculous. That's stupid. Well, anyway.
Well, Joe has never spent a moment under the colors, and frankly, he's not a Democrat. He's never been a Democrat. He is a bigot, and he is a Republican. And what he was doing is he was voting the bigot line from the state of West Virginia.
That's exactly what we're talking about. You said he's never been under the colors. I don't know his past, but I'm going to bet you he came up the easy way. Like, getting back to what I was talking about before, when you ask the average working class person, "I appreciate having paved roads. I appreciate having public education. I appreciate having a fire department." When you ask the average working class person about higher taxes, most of them will say, "Well, you know what? I really don't like it, but there's something that has to be done, because if we want to keep things going the way they are, then it's not free." You follow me? Okay, but a rich person will go, "Well, why do I have to do?" Because they live in these ivory towers. They don't understand that this stuff costs money. That's why when you ask them that, they go, "Well, why should I pay for that?" The average working class person will break his back to help his brother, but a rich person will screw his partner if he thinks he can profit. You know what I mean?
I think you've nailed it. You've nailed it to the wall, Tony.
Anyway, Bob, thanks a lot for letting me vent.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
Take care now.
You too. Bye now.
Bye bye.
Calling from Vegas, that's our buddy Tony, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Yeah, so did you happen to get that article I sent you about New York?
Looking at it now.
Listen, that one just really is doing me in. I'm like, wow. Let's see. So you use real suffering people trying to get help to solve their homeless problem, and you just sort of, well, let's see what happens to them when they don't get this assistance that they think they're getting.
Yeah, I mean, I, again, this is one of those that I read while we were waiting on Doodle to recover. And it's a story by Kara Buckley in the New York Times today. The title is "To Test Housing Program, Some Are Denied Aid." And I mean, the way it's... When I just read the first couple of lines, I went, no, they really didn't do this.
You know, and it's just... I don't know, it just struck me as just indicative of, you know, what's going on overall, where... if anything needs to be moved, we have to sort of satisfy the upper strata now. You know what I mean?
Right, because...
It just sort of folds into that whole ethos, which is, you know, it's quite disturbing.
Kind of gives you a whole different perspective when you start thinking about what Dim Leader was prattling on about back when he was talking about an ownership society.
Well,
the rich in this country now have literally a veto over whether or not homeless people get assistance. Because this story, what it talks about is the fact that, and it says in the start out, it has long been the standard practice in medical testing, give drug treatment to one group while another, the control group, goes without. And now New York City government has done the same thing to homelessness. Half of the test subjects, people who are behind on rent and in danger of being evicted, are being denied assistance from the program for 2 years while researchers to see them, researchers track them to see if they wind up homeless. This is social Mengele-ism, Sandra.
Yeah, no, it's just it is so despicable. I don't even have, you know, the sort of vocabulary. I don't even know how to describe it. It just so disturbed me. You know, to the point where you're just almost despairing, because that is just not right in anybody's book. You know what I mean? I don't, you know, the researchers, all those types, all of it, it's revolting. It's like, I already have issues with the sort of coordinating class that the whole poverty thing supports. You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, most certainly.
Yeah, as I, you know, I mean, you know, and so when I see it sort of exercised in that manner, you're like, ew. Because I always think, when I used to go get food stamps or whatever other assistance I could drag out, I was always amazed by the sort of, just the level of belittlement and hoops and all sorts of shit they put you through just because.
Yeah, and you know, Tony in the last call, Sandra, mentioned, you know, that great Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy movie, Trading Places. This is that. This is those two old codgers betting a dollar on whether some poor family's going to wind up in the damn streets.
Yeah, but it's under the auspices of, you know, some sort of research, and there's supposed to be some value
added
to it.
Right. The study was necessary to determine whether the $23 million program called Homebase helped the people for whom it was intended.
No, and this is in a city that's governed by that plutocrat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just so disgusting. And also, you know, I'm starting to, you know, I'm like, okay, so now we have to be subjected to, like I told you before, the majority of Congress is millionaires, and they're deciding to give themselves a tax break. You understand what I'm saying? So am I supposed to pretend that that isn't a vested interest? You see what I mean? They're not representing anybody. They're in a position of power.
Not only is it vested, it's a conflict of interest.
It's a conflict, yeah, and they're able to sort of give themselves tax relief.
But Sandra, this is only the extension of a modus operandi that's sort of been creeping through government for a number of years. Do you remember several years ago during the Dim Leader administration when the Food and Drug Administration had a program where they gave T-shirts and a video camera to poor families that agreed to expose their children to household chemicals?
Yeah, in the great state of Florida. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, no, but it's, and so it's really hard for me to give the Obama administration any kind of slack because, you know, I saw that ad that whatever group ran showing Obama in all his glory talking about how he felt about the high-end tax cuts. Have you seen that?
No.
When he was campaigning, it was so much, it's such a different story. And for them to now be bombarding every supporter with the reason why we need to extend these, it's a joke. It's just a nightmare. I mean, you know, and I have to agree. I agree with who called? Was that Kevin who called?
Gary.
Gary. You know, I agree with him that the Democrats really should have dealt with this, and they ran away from Obama. That is true. But the disarray of the party is disgusting when there's so many lives at stake because, like you said, the fact that Democrats have been pushed in a corner where they have the tax cuts and the unemployment together is just incompetence. It's straight up incompetence. That should be decoupled. It shouldn't even be associated with it. And also, the Obama administration allowing for this reduction in the Social Security, I'm still stuck on that because that doesn't bode well for
no, that's downright terrifying.
It's so many poison pills in this bill that they're trying to push. I mean, I don't know what the latest. I kind of heard that the Democrats are upset because they weren't consulted, so they threw a little tantrum, right?
Yeah, and said that the bill as it's currently manifested will not be allowed onto the floor.
Well, I think it's, I thought it was interesting that so there was a bill. I mean, when was this done? You see what I'm saying about all this? This is so shady.
Yeah,
very shady.
Yeah, it all feels like it's happening in the shadows.
Well, and also it's like, you had the deal on Monday, and then pop, poof, there's a bill? Come on, you know? I'm still not feeling good about it. I think it's still in the kabuki realm, if you know what I mean.
Well, yeah, I mean, me too, because there's, I guess it's just the inbuilt cynicism, Sandra, that makes me think that eventually a deal will be struck, something will be rammed through, and we'll be talking about the Democrats really forced Obama to get a better deal.
Oh, no. The whole thing has been handled just so badly. But, see, if you're operating as if this is a normal kind of give and take with the Democrats that are always disarray, that's one thing. But if you're looking at it as a point of view of Obama is just a neoliberal who got early money from Wall Street, then I got to look at it differently, okay?
How can you not?
I have to look at it differently, and I can't toe the line no more. And like I wrote to you, you know, it's time to move on and make other plans. And I'm not talking about any sort of primarying him, because that ain't going to work. That's a bunch of BS, of course. But, you know, I just need to know what I'm not going to be assuming anything with Obama if he's what I think he is.
You mean the blue dog that he says he is?
Well, exactly. You know, we keep being told. You know what I mean?
Right, but there's some among us who keep insisting, no, he's going to be a liberal just any minute now. He's going to be a liberal.
No, and, so he was a bit frustrated at the podium, but it's like, dude, you know, you need to turn it somewhere else. I'm not going to get over it. You need to turn it on to somebody else. If for some reason...
But that was just Robert Gibbs' redux. I mean, looking back now, do we understand, Sandra, that when Robert Gibbs had his little hissy about the professional left, that wasn't coming from Robert Gibbs?
Well, as we know with spokespeople, that's what they are. They are actually a conduit. I mean, it's no need. We forget that. But they really are speaking for who they speaking for. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And, you know, if he has...
But the question, you know, the question isn't so much them... But, you know, is it, there's an element, you know, because I go to these message boards and stuff, and God knows I've watched, I mean, I sat in slack-jawed amazement last night when Lawrence O'Donnell was screaming at Alan Grayson.
Well, he was telling Alan Grayson what his job was and what he knew when he didn't have a word one about it. I mean, yeah, that was just bizarre anyway.
I mean, everybody here who's helped write a tax bill, raise your hand. Yeah, I see. None of you but me have. You know.
That was
kind of Captain Queegee, wasn't it? I mean, yeah, I got them with the strawberries. Jesus.
Yeah. No. It definitely was. And I don't really care about the squabbling amongst, you know, the so-called base, but you know, the sort of people who are supporting this Obama McConnell plan, which is what I call it, you know, they tripping because they have a hard time trying to justify what the hell they're doing. You know what I'm saying? I think that's why they get so hysterical, because it ain't no way of putting lipstick on that pig.
No, and you know, the line that Olbermann had two nights ago where he said, I was called by a senior administration official and was told about it and asked to support it, and I said, but the base has vanished and the American people don't like this. And he said the response that he got from the White House was, well, they obviously haven't read the bill. And you know, and that didn't play real well with Olbermann, because he said, that's it. It's not that the deal stinks. It's that we just don't understand.
Well, no, exactly. But don't forget the sort of the Hamilton, not commission, but it was it's another one of those business roundtable things that Obama is so tied to. And I hate to keep going back to that, but if we're dealing with a sort of neoliberal, then this is what we have to be fighting against, is this sort of shock doctrine, incrementally taking apart what's left of the safety net and expanding the power of the rich further while people are scrambling for nut and not voting. This is, you know what I mean? This is what's unfolding.
This is the new reality?
Yeah, because as people get more beat down and government isn't working for them at all, they turn away, as any normal person would do, right? But in the meanwhile, the powers that be are consolidating, and they're running out their various people like Obama every 2 years for election. You know, something has to give. And if he thinks he's just going to roll into a second term, I don't know. Maybe Palin is keeping that part.
I mean, that was my next question, Sandra. Is somebody sitting in the White House, you know, because clearly he doesn't have that guy that we think should be there, you know, the Jesus Barack guy. He ain't there. But is there somebody telling, oh, you can whip Sarah Palin. You can mop up the, you can mop the floors with her, sir. It's going to be like shooting fish in a barrel. And we don't know, and we're left speculating, and I hate speculation, Sandra.
No, but I mean, if you just look common sense or whatever astuteness politically that you have, which you have a lot of, tells you that if Sarah Palin is actually somewhere around the nomination, yeah, he can act the way he's acting now because he will get reelected. You see what I'm saying? I mean, I think if people see her, they're going to be like, oh, shit. And voting rolls for that fool, right?
No, but it ain't going to be her, and it ain't going to be Gingrich, and it ain't going to be Magic Underwear Mitt, and it ain't... No.
It's going to be Jeb Bush.
It is Jeb.
Haley Barbour for vice president.
Or Jebby Jindal.
Well, but you know, yeah, they might put some darky. Yeah, you're right about that. But she a Trojan horse. And Obama and his crew, they too smart by, they too cute, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really know. I have to say that, you know, I'm so totally disgusted by this kind of run to the rich that's going on in this country, and it's just so blatant now. It's stunning. The Obama administration is saying now that the tax cut is good, basically.
Well, it's good for, but the thing that slays me is that I'll be opposed to it in 2 years. I promise I will.
Well, no, see, that is just, is that a joke?
I laughed.
That's a laugh out loud moment. You got to be out of your damn mind. Yeah. No, that was, like I say, Obama Hoover, for real, though. Because there's no reason that in 2 years shit is going to be that much better.
Well, one of those people on one of those panels the other night called him Barack Hoover Obama.
No, you're lying. I thought that was strictly reserved for our people. What?
No. I forget which panel it was, but yeah, one of the Barack Hoover Obama.
Oh, no. See, I hate when our shit seeps into that. You know, I want to get compensated. Anyway, Bob, listen, I'll let you go.
All right, you take care, Sandra.
All right, bye.
Bye now. I swear I heard it. I do. I really did. And let's see, who's up next? Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, Ike?
All right, buddy. Well, I still think y'all are being a little too hard on him, but I'll go with that. And just to let you know, somebody that's been unemployed because his job's been insourced and his job's been outsourced, I've been through the gamut. I'm an American veteran, 51 years old, who went to construction because I figured they couldn't send the buildings out of the country to get them worked on or painted, which is what I do. And I worked in the, during Reagan, I was working on the, Chrysler assembly line, doing wiring harnesses, okay, for $3.50 an hour. And once they got their loan guarantee, they put 700 of us out of work. We were doing, harnesses for four different, Chrysler models plus the M60 tank, which was being built, you know, Cadillac Gauge was building that across the river in Cocoa, Florida, okay? And then I worked in the steel industry after that, and they allowed free trade to flood the steel industry, and they kicked my ass on that one. So you know what? I want to apologize to all your listeners. I really do. I'm sorry that I'm unemployed.
I don't think anybody thinks you owe them an apology.
Well, no, and follow me here, okay? I'm sorry I put President Obama in this situation where he's caring more for people that are going to get their butts kicked, that ain't going to have the money to put food in their refrigerator or keep their lights on or keep the heat on. You know what? If that's the way you see it, and if that's he's being a scumbag or whatever for it, you think it ain't worth fighting for, then so be it. It's my fault, okay? It's my fault. All right? I'll tell you right now, I appreciate what he's doing. I really do. I appreciate the hell out of it. There's a bunch of us out here that are going to starve if we don't get this money. All right?
But you're a 99er, right?
Excuse me?
You're a 99er, right?
No, I'm not. And as a matter of fact, I hope that's something they fight for. I hope the 99ers get some frickin' help.
Well, see, they're not.
I really do.
Under the deal as it is now envisioned, there's no relief for the 99ers.
The deal's not done.
Well, the deal that the Democrats
have made it perfectly clear they're going to continue to fight. They are not done with the deal. It hadn't been passed. You know, talking to you is the same thing as talking to some other folks that sit here and tell me that Obama's already spent too much money and it's going to be $10 trillion when he gets out of office.
No, it's not, because I've never complained about the debt for a moment, Ike. But the fact of the matter is, the deal that he announced didn't have a doggone thing in it for the 99ers. Not a penny.
And it's not done yet.
Because in order to have something for the 99ers, you would have to create a fifth tier.
Has it been passed?
No, it has not been passed.
No, it hasn't been
passed. It was not something that he wanted either, Ike.
Well,
if he had wanted it, he might have negotiated for it.
All right. Well, then you're going to write off the House and the Senate. Is that what you're telling me?
No, that's not what I'm telling you. Don't put words in my mouth.
He
announced a deal, and there was nothing for the 99ers in it. He then sent Joe Biden, his vice president, to Capitol Hill, who told people on Capitol Hill, this is the deal, take it or leave it. And with that that's when the rebellion took place.
Trust me, brother, I'm well up on the news the same way you are, and all I'm telling you is this. The deal ain't been done. There's going to be a bunch of fights that are going to go on here, and one of the fights is going to be for the 99ers. But beyond that, I appreciate the idea that I'm between 26 and 99 weeks, and I am going to have my extension, and I am going to have my benefits, and I am going to do this, that, and the other thing. That's fine. But you know what? I'm going to apologize to the United States, to my fellow Democrats and whoever else, to the point that, you know what? I shouldn't be in this situation. I shouldn't have to worry about my job being outsourced or insourced, okay, which goes back to illegal immigration. Don't get me, you know, don't even get me started, because me and you don't agree on that. But I'm just telling you, I've been dealing with this crap for years, all right? And I'll tell you this, Obama is being pragmatic. And you can bitch all you want, but the fact of the matter is, again, I'll tell you one more time, and I'll keep telling you, he didn't have the freaking votes to get the damn shit passed, whatever he wanted to do. He didn't have the majority. You still got a screwed up freaking goddamn situation here where they go and they can freaking
You think he might have had a few more votes if he had invited a Democrat or two into the negotiations?
As long as you can take one Republican and throw a filibuster, you're done.
That's the Senate.
It's the problem with the rules. We both know it. Right?
So under that theory, it like Sandra said, it is all kabuki. There's not a shred of reality
exactly.
to it.
Exactly. There you go. Now you understand why I'm an independent. Because I know what the hell's going on here. This is bullshit. You people want to play Republican Democrat? You're full of shit. You don't understand.
Well, you know, I got a couple of rules here, and one of them is that I don't tell anyone they're full of shit, and no one tells me that I'm full of shit. So take care, Ike. Good night. I'm sorry. I don't have any stomach for that. That is not the essence of conversation radio. That is not how this happens. And I don't recall ever having had to do that to someone before. And I don't like having had to do it just now. But no, we're not going to play that way. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
I really appreciated the debate and dialogue there. And both of you, I thought, brought some very good points. And I'm sure Mike didn't. My feeling is that Ike didn't intend any ill will when he, you know, said what he said. Sometimes we just get kind of habits of doing battle verbally. But anyway, I appreciate the discussion and the forum that we're all provided to kind of vent or ramble or whatever.
And I'm all for that, but I've been at this too long, Preston, to let this devolve into a name-calling match. People who want that are free to tune into Bortz or O'Reilly or Hannity or Limbaugh or Beck or any of those, but we are not going to do that here.
Yeah, and I'm sure next time Ike calls, he'll respect that. That's my guess, anyway. Anyway, good points, I thought. I understand the disappointment and problems with Obama's, that whole thing, and also the talk he gave, the press conference he gave afterwards. I thought, although I didn't agree with it all, I thought he made some good points during it. I don't know. And maybe this is a first step. Who knows, in, from some perspectives. I don't know.
You know, I hate the fact, Preston, that I'm so jaded, and many of us are, that I look at it as kabuki theater.
Yeah.
Because if it's kabuki theater, then it means that those people, those who are legitimately suffering, the 99ers for starters, are nothing more than toys, if they are even that.
Yeah.
And frankly, that is an indicator of a larger political problem. And it's the kind of political problem that spells, frankly, disaster.
Yeah, I mean, we're being used like toys in so many ways, so often at our workplace. And, it's something, the way we're manipulated by so many systems, it's a shame. I don't know. Again, who knows? I think a lot of it is in process. I mean, it depends on what we do. It's not what Obama's going to do. It's what we're going to do out here. In some ways, Obama's not even in charge. You know, that's one thing I think I have some sympathy for him in all this. Jimmy Carter, after his first year or so as president, said something about how shocked he was at how little power the position has. And, you know, he has that whole super powerful, super rich elite skulking all around the place.
And again, you know, I go back to that question I keep asking, Preston. Who's telling him that this stuff is a good idea? Who told him that it would be a good idea to allow the Republicans? And again, I'm making an assumption that's not necessarily grounded in fact, that it was the Republicans who insisted on conjoining unemployment and the tax cuts for the rich. It may have been his idea, but under either scenario, Preston, who are the people that said that's a great idea, Mr. President?
Yeah. You know, I've so appreciated Bernie Sanders' voice through all this. I think he's so eloquently and courageously carrying a more, you know, radical torch, for sure. And I think a lot of people are behind him. I don't think he's just kind of like the fringe lone socialist. I think about 70% of this country carries a lot of basically democratic socialist values.
Sherrod Brown has made some of the right noises. Mm-hmm. He's done a good job. What's his name? Congressman Welch from Vermont. Took a heroic stance, and for his pains, he got savaged by Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC.
Yeah, I was starting to wonder how long it would be until they really kind of aim their media guns at Bernie Sanders, and I'm sure they're trying to dig up something or another on him. And then just I think a night or two ago, I did see Bernie's image popped up on Bill O'Reilly's show, and they didn't really go after him so much. They didn't do the character assassination stuff so much, not yet anyway, but they just spoke about him and talked about how wrong he was, and Karl Rove was on the set, and he held up this, one of those chalkboard things, the marker board that he's so fond of using.
Yeah.
Like the coach. 82% of Americans agree that you shouldn't raise taxes during a recession. And I don't know whose numbers they're using, but if the poll had been, just worded differently, like, do you think billionaires and millionaires should pay more? Most people will be for that, against social democratic values, but they're so rarely presented.
And the other thing is again, messaging. I'm sorry to keep harping on this, but how do we keep blowing such golden opportunities? Now, that's not to say some people aren't making the point, because they are. But if, because they're still prating this job creation aspect of tax cuts for the rich. And I live in the reality-based universe, Preston. So do you. So does the Horn family.
Yeah.
If that was the case, and every time you cut taxes, you created jobs, then necessarily the thing to do would be to cut all taxes to zero, and everybody works.
Yeah. It's such a deceitful, it's obfuscation at its finest, how we talk about the economy. I mean, it was the collective, the government, that created so many industries. The computer industry would not exist if not for, decades of research and development at places like publicly funded places like MIT, University of California, school system, where they did the research into that. It's through the government that we put up the satellites, through which so much communication and the GPS stuff and all that cell phone stuff. Profits being privatized now.
The internet?
Right down the line. Europe's government had a lot to do with that as well. The Canadian government had a lot to do with developing Java. I mean, this is how the real world works. But all this empty rhetoric about, get government out of our way so that the Ayn Randian Uber capitalists can pretend like he did it all and get these obscene profits. It's maddening. This discussion in some ways, but it's getting revealed, I think, here and there. What else? Before I forget, speaking of economies, I want to talk about a local economy, and that's the economy of your show. And I noticed on your Facebook page that a couple other people had mentioned that there was a little confusion when they went to donate over PayPal.
Yeah, well, there's something squirrely about our subscription setup, and I don't know what it is.
Well, I just want to give a heads up to your other listeners who may want to support the show, that they might want to check back with that and make sure. And I had the same issue, and that was I had signed up to donate monthly, and it only went for 1 month. And then there is a area where you can plug in how many months you want to go for. But it can only be a single digit, like up to 9, because when I went to punch in 12, it went back to 1. So that may have happened to other people, and people might want to check back on that.
I went and tried to do it just when I started getting notes telling me that it was squirrely. I tried to set up a subscription for myself. to the horn.
Yeah.
And I went through it two or three times and couldn't make it go.
Okay. Okay.
And I don't know what it is.
Well, you still take checks too, right?
To the snail mail address. Wayne goes to the mailbox every week.
Great, great. An earlier comment from another caller, and this is back to our usual broadcasting, but I did want to mention that financial stuff because it's crucial that you get the support and solidarity, of course, for your wonderful insights. But again, I so appreciate the views of the callers, and, you know, Sandra is always...
Oh, wonderful. So do I. I mean, that's why we created the concept of conversation radio.
Yeah.
Because if it was just me pontificating for 3 hours a night, there wouldn't be, I'll be honest, Preston, there wouldn't be a lot of value in it. Because I don't like to listen to people pontificate. I'm funny that way, but I really like what happens when people of goodwill process together. Yes, that's part of why that's part of my hardwiring as a liberal.
Mm-hmm. Although every now and again, soliloquy, I think it is, has its moments, its application.
Yeah, well, you know, around here we call that a filibobster.
Right, right. But speaking of the other callers, Tony in Vegas, I was so glad he mentioned that news bit about the Palestinians offering to help with the fires in Israel and how that was really not reported at all except for a couple of websites. I think I saw it on Common Dreams or something like that. Such an important point, though, and we're not presented it because, again, people are trying to control our perceptions.
Right, and it runs directly contrary to the narrative that's being pushed.
That's right.
But you know, alongside that story, the decision of several South American states to say, you know, we're going to go ahead and recognize a Palestinian state, regardless of what the United States thinks. We're going to do that now.
Yeah.
Brazil being one of them. You know, Brazil is as large as the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Bolivia was one of the first to start to recognize the rights and the value of non-human species, you know, to nature, to trees and all that. And I think there's a state now, actually, one of the U.S. states that has started to recognize biodiversity and, you know, animals and stuff. The frogs, you know, the rights of the frogs are being decimated, you know, kind of like we decimated the buffalo. You know, what a tragedy. And
but, you know, when you're down to the frogs and mayflies, those are, you know, the scientists, the biologists would tell you, Preston, those are marker species.
Yeah.
And when they can't survive, you're not going to for very long either.
Because, yeah, we're basically in the same pond.
Yeah, you know, I looked and I was watching the weather map. The Weather Channel was on in the surgery waiting room earlier today. And the national map was up. And you're going to think I'm crazy, Preston, but I really do this. And I think you know I do.
Okay.
I saw 61 under the word Denver. And I thought, Preston has got to be going out of his tree.
You know, I'm certainly noticing this. It's been odd weather for sure. And dangerous weather, too, in some ways. I mean, a friend of mine lives, you know, I know several people live in the hills west of Boulder, almost lost their homes. And then we've got this bark beetle. You know, they've been, with the more mild winters, we've got, you know, the bark beetles have really been thriving and just taking down acres and acres and acres of trees. But, you know, at the same time, we did have a Governor Ritter, who I'm sure was compromised in a lot of ways, got all sorts of heat from the oil and gas industry people, but he still put forward a lot of helpful things regarding weatherizing homes and putting up solar. And, you know, we have at least two big wind turbine manufacturing plants here in Denver, that Dutch company Vestas.
And bless his heart, your Senator Mark Udall, regardless of what other issues we may or may not have with him, did take to the floor of the Senate today and did not mince words in condemning the Senate's failure to pass the Don't Ask, Don't Tell legislation. And he said, and I thought it was kind of, you know, it's kind of brave for a senator to say, he said, I'm willing to stay through the holidays to debate it as a standalone measure. The vote that we just had means that we don't have a debate on don't ask, don't tell.
Excellent. He has I'm not sure if it's a brother or a cousin.
Well, there's that entire extended family. They're all over the West.
And I guess the father, too, is it Stuart, I think? But he did a lot of helpful stuff as a politician. You know, there is so much corruption, but there and again, some politicians really have, you know.
Well, you know, there's an old saying, and I think it's especially applicable to Democrats in politics, that even a blind hog finds an acorn now and then. but Preston, it lies to us, the so-called liberal base, to make sure that we keep scattering acorns.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, scattering acorns. Have you ever seen a film called The Man Who Planted Trees?
No.
It's a great animated film from France it was made about 30 years ago, I think, and very beautifully put, pro-nature, anti-militarism message in it, The Man Who Planted Trees. And more recently, there have been DVDs and children's books called about The Woman Who Planted Trees, Wangari Maathai. I don't know if you're familiar with her work.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And, who knows, someday she may join you all in Appalachia and replant some trees. But,
well, I wanted to go back for just a minute in talking about the Palestinian firefighter story.
Great.
One of those credit where credit is due moments. David in Tennessee is letting me know that the Palestinian fire help story ran on MSNBC's website for 2 days in their World U.S. News section.
Okay.
And for 4 hours one day, David says it was highlighted above the fold.
Excellent. Well, good for MSNBC. You know, there again, I think sometimes I get very critical of, you know, segments of the media, but I so appreciate hearing where it's doing useful things. MSNBC, yeah, definitely. I caught Lawrence O'Donnell's new show recently, and I think just last night he had Alan Grayson on, and
I have been watching Lawrence O'Donnell fairly approvingly until exactly that last night, Preston, you know, because I wasn't on the air. And when I saw him savage Alan Grayson...
I missed that, actually. I just saw that he was on. I didn't know.
Preston, he screamed at him.
Oh, boy. That's too bad.
And it was all in the context of, well, I've drafted a tax bill, and let me tell you, you're just wrong, and let me tell you where you're wrong. And you know,
condescending.
It was condescending. It was vilifying. It was just awful. I mean, it was truly terrible.
And
he took these little backhanded swipes without naming names. He took these little backhanded swipes at Rachel and at Keith. There are some on this network who think it's a good idea to resist the president's proposal. Blah, 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 blah. And let me tell you, and boy, howdy, don't I know. And
you know, that kind of behavior can be so revealing, you know, so instructive at times.
You said a mouthful, Brother Preston, because it was. I learned more about Lawrence O'Donnell in about 5 minutes than I ever thought I wanted to know, and what I learned was not good.
But I do believe in opportunities for redemption, for sure, and so I'll try to catch it every now and again.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll pick up something, you know, a progressive moment or thought, or I don't know. I think some of those other guests, you know, I really haven't caught much of it at all. I think at one point he said something about being a socialist. I don't know.
He did. He said, I'm a socialist. But he said it in the context of, you know, I like the roads to be fixed. I like planes not to fall out of the air.
Yeah.
I like
yeah.
bridges that don't collapse. I like people who don't starve to death. And that was the context, and therefore support social programs and programs that go to the common good. And within that context, yeah, he was a socialist.
Okay, great. Yeah. And, you know, I guess it is kind of a form of socialism.
Well, yeah, it was. I perceived it when he said it as being a sort of Ich bin ein Berliner sort of moment.
Okay. So, anyway, you know, it's been good to see Rachel Maddow. I guess her ratings went up like 20%.
Well, like I said, she should get an Emmy for what she did last night. The interview with that goon from Uganda.
Oh, the homo.
You know what? I felt bad for her. Not because she was doing a bad job, but just because she was looking into the face. You know, I don't know what it would be like to look directly at someone that you know, if he was given his way, would see you killed. She maintained a level of professionalism and aplomb and unflappability that was magnificent to behold, Preston. If you haven't seen, you go back and watch the clip. But because this guy, you know, this is the guy who's supported by C Street and the family and all of these sick right-wing religion industry fundamentalists, and they're behind this bill in Uganda that would literally criminalize being gay.
Yeah.
And in some cases, and I didn't know this about it, but in listening to her, part of the legislation has to do with the fact that Uganda says that it would be willing to extradite Ugandans abroad who had engaged in homosexual activity outside of Uganda's borders, and upon their return there would try them, convict them, and put them in prison for life. Now, how long do you reckon life is in a Ugandan prison?
Right. Or in a Bolivian prison, was it, where they had that fire, or was it Chile in 83 prison?
Chile, yeah, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, horrible. And here in our country, you know, there's so much sexual violence that goes on. You know, and it's so ironic, too, how often that the people who end up being in these cages, oftentimes it has something to do with one or another illegal plant, an illegal drug. So they arrest them, put them in the cages, and what happens over and over again? They are put on drugs, the corporate drugs.
Right.
The ones they're selling. You know, this is so much of a market war going on, and that they.
Well, it's all the Chinese opium wars all over again, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. There's that. You know, Nixon actually had this commission where, you know, let's look into this, and the commission came back and said, you know, certainly don't criminalize the soft drugs, and Carter administration likewise made a distinction between hard and soft drugs and how to approach them. And but it was rejected, and Nixon and, well, the people in charge on the right, who really had a lot of power, you know, then too, used it as a tool against a weapon against African Americans, the whole jazz culture, that whole community, against Mexicans who were going back and forth between our countries during their agriculture work, and against the hippies. So the war on cannabis began and has jailed hundreds of thousands of people over the past, you know, 20 years or so.
Yeah, made criminals out of people who weren't criminals.
That's right. We had a farmer in northern Colorado who, you know, was losing his land because, you know, the corn prices are so low. He took a segment of his land and he grew some marijuana, and he was making ends meet. And then he got caught.
Now he's in prison.
For the rest of his life, most likely, because, you know, he's in his 60s. So he'll probably die alone in jail. So where's that free market they're always talking about?
Yeah, sorry, not so much where that's concerned.
Right, exactly.
But then again, where's the free market where the tax cuts are concerned?
Well, I've got good news, Bob, though, because it's not all as grim as it looks and as unjust as it is and how entrenched it's all seemed. Here in Colorado, there are aspects of it that are being overcome. And it's been so great to watch this medical marijuana industry developed. The entrepreneurs, the storefronts that were empty before, now have these retail shops.
And they're respectable businesses, right? I mean, there's no gang fighting, nobody with no machine guns or no.
For the most part, every now and again there'll be issues. You know, there's always going to be some issues. There have been some break-ins at times, armed robberies, stuff like that, and scary stuff. But that can happen anywhere. I mean, that sort of thing happens at the 7-Elevens all the time. I mean, talk about people.
Yeah, but we don't talk about shutting down the 7-Elevens, right?
That's right, and we shouldn't. But we should, you know, address the violence to whatever extent we can. But, you know, talk about underappreciated people who serve us. Clerks, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a risky job. So,
well, you know, that's one of the
the clerks out there, you know.
Yeah, the other, and speaking of that, it's a story that Rick Smith told me about, a little nightmare unfolding in the state of Pennsylvania. They have some, by my lights, kind of squirrely liquor laws up there. You can't go into a 7-Eleven and buy a six pack of beer. You have to go to what's called a distributor. And you can't go, you know, you can't buy liquor in the Rite Aid. You have to go to a state liquor store, which is just fine by me.
North Carolina's like that. Where is that?
Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yeah.
And so what's going on, though, is the people who work in those state liquor stores, they actually make a living wage. They are members of a union. Right. I think it's the United Food and Commercial Workers.
Okay.
They have a living wage. They have a pension. They have benefits, all of those good things.
Yeah.
Now, guess what's going to happen? The state of Pennsylvania wants to shut them all down and just let Rite Aid and Kroger's and whomever sell liquor. You know, it's not even like the job will be replaced by a guy, making $7 an hour. The job won't be replaced at all. It'll just be another aisle in the store.
And another example of how the real economy actually works. You know, the public created that, and now private interests are coming in, taking it over. Under the banner of higher efficiency or whatever, but it always ends up being more concentrated wealth in the hands of fewer people. Again, it's the elite warring against the general.
And to the extent that you've got some good things happening out in Colorado with regard to medical marijuana, this is another one of those oh Jesus, Obama administration moments. Sorry, you know you're the horn's resident optimist, Preston. So it falls to me to sort of. Pop the balloon once in a while. Out in Oakland, California, I don't know if you saw this or not, Oakland, California has said that they would like to license and tax industrial-sized medical cannabis producers.
Yeah, that's a concern. Or go ahead.
And so...
corporatization of the field?
Well, they want to license and tax producers... and register them and everything. You would think that would provide a little bit of stability within the marketplace.
Yeah.
And so the U.S. Department of Justice, the Eric Holder Department of Justice of the Obama administration, working in conjunction with the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Francisco, says that if that happens, if Oakland does that, federal officials will likely pursue criminal or civil litigation against local marijuana growers, as well as the city officials of Oakland, if they go forward with their plans to license the farming.
Huh. Did they have any rationale for that, or any comment as to what their motivation was?
That it would be a violent, you know, openly noting growers of marijuana on an industrial scale would basically tell. They view it as providing information to the federal government upon which they can then act and prosecute.
Is the intention to like keep it from getting really like industrial size? I mean, are they trying to preserve like
the intention is to preserve the existence of the DEA.
Oh, right. That okay. I'm with you. Yeah. Yeah. Well. And the expense.
Well, I mean, you remember that when what was it? Prop 19 was that the marijuana initiative in California?
Yeah.
When that thing was just percolating along with nice numbers and everything, The Obama administration put the kibosh on that by saying, well, by God, if you do, we're going to come out there and we're going to bust people left and right.
That's disappointing to hear.
And all of a sudden, all the support for Prop 19 went, and of course, no politician would get behind it either.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing the Obama administration did do, and maybe this was even inadvertent, I don't know, but they had a memo a couple of years ago that said, in contrary to what the previous administration was doing, the federal agents were going to back off as long as people were complying with state laws. And that's what really, that was another step towards really unleashing again this incredible industry. I mean, we had at one point over 1,000 dispensaries, many in Denver, but also Boulder, Colorado Springs. In fact, a lot of veterans are accessing them to deal with their PTSD, to deal with their traumatic injuries throughout their bodies, pain relief. You know, they're able to get off the 8 different combinations of Squibb, Meyer, Glaxo, Smith & Klein, Eli Lilly concoctions that aren't working for them and that are causing more harm. Now people have an option, and it's a beautiful thing to see. And again, on top of that, just the rentals going on and growers and a lot of people who don't use it at all are very much benefiting as well. I have friends who are acupuncturists, and they're being hired by these places. People are just growers. And now the state, speaking of kind of institutionalizing this once radical thing, the state's collecting, there's some degree of regulation. You can argue if it's too much. In some ways, it's not too much, too little. The question is it the right kind of regulation? Is it helpful? So far it's working out all right. We don't have quite as many dispensaries, but we still have several hundred. And, what else? We have 2% of the Colorado population has gotten their medical marijuana card. That's 115,000 people. And they have another 100,000 already kind of in the process of being administered to. It's raised millions of dollars for the state. I mean, it's the potheads are keeping some of the libraries open, some of the teachers paid. Useful tax money. You know, taxes can be, that's another thing about the right wing and how much they hate this country. How they undercut what we need.
Yeah, and can we please drive that nail till it's countersunk in the board, Preston? The right wing hates this country. That's what I was talking about at the beginning of the program, you know, with the whole issue of taxation. You know what? I don't think of taxes as being something separate and apart from my citizenship.
Right, right.
It is how we make our country go.
Right, right. They hate the country and the people in it, and they don't have much regard for people in other parts of the world either, that's for sure. I just stumbled upon something regarding the legacy of the Agent Orange, the millions and millions of gallons of that poison that we dropped on Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. And there are still, you know, all sorts of environmental impacts and impacts on the babies. And Vietnamese are actually organizing around it and trying to sue for some compensation. And, you know, there's also an ongoing effort to clear up all the unexploded ordnance that we left behind there. I mean, again, just millions of tons of.
And, you know, you mentioned Agent Orange and stuff, and I just had a 13-year-old get her gallbladder out today. That is not normal.
Right.
And I'm convinced, although I can't tie it to anything, it has to do with the fact that my wife and I are raising children in a toxic waste zone. And so I'm looking at my email earlier today, and lo and behold, and this isn't, you know, again, this is one of those, it's everybody's downstream. This is one of those moments, Preston. McClatchy newspapers, you know, one of those outfits that actually still does journalism. Headline, American urban lake pollution traced to parking lot seal coat. A black sealant, and, you know, again, this is all over the country. A black sealant sprayed on parking lots, driveways, and playgrounds turns out to be the largest contributor to the rise of a toxic pollutant in urban lakes and reservoirs across America, according to a new survey from the U.S. Geological Survey. Concentrations of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, otherwise known as PAHs, going up rapidly in the 1990s in areas of urban sprawl. They've been known as a probable human carcinogen since the 19th century when cancer struck chimney sweeps. We're talking about coal tar here, basically.
Yeah.
They're toxic to fish and other aquatic plant and animal life. They sampled sediments from the bottom of 40 lakes and reservoirs in places like Anchorage, Alaska, Fort Worth, Texas, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Orlando, Raleigh, Chicago, Newark, Detroit, Milwaukee, and Boston. And the lakes that had the high levels of PAHs also had a large fraction of those PAHs coming out of coal tar-based sealants.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know...
The way we've toxified this this world is it's a sin, really. You know, they can't even eat the animals they catch in the Arctic anymore. They've got so many heavy metals and stuff there.
Right.
And I guess a lot of women's milk, the breast milk of women around.
Rocket them. Fuel. I remember that story. I can't let go of it. From New Jersey to Arizona, from Washington to Florida, and all points in between. Mother's right. milk samples contained toxic concentrations of rocket fuel components.
And there again, we have options. You know, this is not... necessary. A necessary sacrifice to the corporate overlords. Actually, The Onion, I don't know if you catch that satirical...
Oh, gosh, yes.
One of their cover stories on the most recent issue is, 20,000 sacrifice to the corporate altar or something. And, some of its stuff is it's funny in a way, but then so serious and such an important... way to look at the world and what's going on. And, you know, people are being sacrificed to a corporate altar. Again, we have options. Social democracy works, and it's worked here, actually, and in some ways. We do have libraries. We have achieved a tremendous amount of freedom of speech via the civil rights movements, just people coming out and speaking their piece, gay people come out of the closet. I saw something.
And that's the thing, Preston. There's a lot here worth fighting for. And if we turn back for a moment to what you said previously, the right wing hates this country. By definition, they hate the things that make this country great. And as such, we can't, we can't give up the fight. I've really appreciated the conversation tonight, Preston, and it's been one of those really dandy ones, and I thank you very much for it, and I hope you have a wonderful week. I look forward to hearing from you again.
You too. We'll chat again soon.
All right. Take care, Preston. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Preston really is the Horns resident optimist. Every time I get a little bit low, he has a miraculous way of making a phone call and reminding me that, there's plenty of good out there. An email coming in from our dear friend Jude out in the Great Northwest. She said, with the interchange from Ike being called to a halt, I got to say, Bob, thank you for setting the firm line of how we will allow another to speak to us. When one is speaking to you, Bob, they are indeed speaking to all of the Horn family. Disrespect is a deadly seed, and once it is introduced, it will take hold, leading only to a downward spiral. So I really appreciate that affirmation, because I don't want to be mean to anybody. I don't want to be rude to anybody. There's plenty of that elsewhere if that's your bag. You know, I don't allow right-wingers on this program, because while it makes for good circus radio, it utterly defeats the entire purpose of conversation radio. And that's what this is about. It is a conversation. It is a dialogue. It is a process. It is a conversation that has gone on for more than 5 years. That's what it is. It's a running conversation. We back reference. We forward reference. We know where we've been. We know where we're going. But the minute that that ad hominem stuff enters into the process, Jude's right. It becomes a poisonous thing, and I'll not have that here. Ron in Raleigh also sending along an email. He says, the problem with state-controlled liquor, going back to the Pennsylvania story, is that the state views liquor as a sinful product. Here in North Carolina, the selection is limited. The prices are high. Store hours are limited. There are low limits on the amounts you can buy and transport. However, I understand the state limits allow for a higher wage for ABC workers. This is one of those issues that has positives and negatives on both sides. Remember, there are less than a dozen states that are purveyors of liquor. That's true. That's true. But in a place like Pennsylvania, it's got its redneck. It's got its redneck aspects to it. But by the same token, I think you could say that maybe Pennsylvania has a healthier attitude about liquor than maybe North Carolina, no offense. And I hate to see all of those good, you know, I hate to see any aspect of union busting given its head. Kevin, writing in from Seoul, says, in regard to President Obama, Lawrence O'Donnell and et al., in short, the D.C. bunch, you have to understand the nature of Washington, D.C. It is the ultimate roach motel. They check in, and once in, they don't check out, and they don't want to. Every day, thousands of people come into D.C. in hope of selling their soul. Take this from a former Beltway resident. It is very hard not to sell your soul there. Just look at the people who try to maintain their integrity most recently, soon-to-be former Congressman Alan Grayson. To be honest, I don't see any cushy lobbying job or newscasting job in his future. President Obama probably wrote one check too many that he may not be able to cash in the wheeling-dealing nature of D.C. Remember, if Obama does not satisfy the wealthy and powerful, they will assassinate his character or him physically. I thank God every day I am now an outsider looking in, and for the drastic changes that have occurred in my life in recent years. For the past 6+ months, I've been involved with a lovely South African woman here in South Korea. In March, we're moving in together in Shanghai. There's a large South African expat community here in Southeast Asia, and the thing that impressed me the most about them is first the unity in spite of that great nation's troubled past. Democracy is very new to South Africa, and I know I should not, but I am amazed. But it does, how the South African expat community values it, and will fight to the death to protect and keep it. And, oh, by the way, we're working towards me becoming a citizen of South Africa. Can't blame you, Kevin. Don't blame you. Not at all. Hey, a little something-something along the lines of what Kevin just said about assassination of character and so forth. I got a little something here that's well worth a couple of moments. It's about 3 minutes long. You remember the Tim Wise essay from a couple of weeks back about what if the Tea Party was black? Well, what if indeed? Jasiri X is a rapper, and he's answered that question.
Main principal political voice coming from the right now is the Tea Party, and even though you have a Tea Party that's very angry, a very racist message, they're armed. Oftentimes they're portrayed as just being patriotic and just wanting to do what's best for their country in America. And I ask myself the question, what if the Tea Party was black? What if these were black? How do you think they would be portrayed by the media?
What if the Tea Party was black? Holding guns like the Black Panther Party was back. If Al was Rush Limbaugh and Jesse was Sean Hannity and Tavis was Glenn Beck, would you harm their families? If Sarah Palin was suddenly just a soldier, would you leave it to the voters and go and get the soldiers? Y'all know if the Tea Party was black, the government would have been had the army attack. What if Michael Bazin was on your FM dial for 3 hours every day calling the president foul? Would they say free speech or find evidence how to charge him with treason like he's un-American now? Would a minister Farrakhan pray for the death of the commander-in-chief that he be laid to rest? Would they treat it as the gravest threat or never make an arrest? Even today, still hated for less.
What if President Obama would have lost the election? Quit his job so he could go talk to the left and bash the government for being off of direction, fraught with deception, and told black people they want all of our weapons and we want our own country and call for secession? Would he be arrested and tossed in correction for trying to foster regression against the people's lawful selection? Our question, what if the Tea Party was black, holding guns like the Black Panther Party was back? If Al was Rush Limbaugh and Jesse was Sean Hannity and Tavis was Glenn Beck, would you harm their families? If Sarah Palin was suddenly just a soldier, would you leave it to the voters and go and get the soldiers? Y'all know if the Tea Party was black, the government would have been had the army attack. What if black people went on Facebook and made a page that for the death of the president-elect we prayed? Would the creators be tased and thrown in the cage? We know the page wouldn't have been displayed all these days. What if Jeremiah Wright said that everybody white wasn't a real American? Would you feel scared of him if he had a militia with pictures that depict the president and said that they would kill and bury that? Wait, what if Cynthia McKinney limited the winning of the new president and Hennedy wasn't really a true resident with no proof or evidence? With the media treated like a huge press event, they would have attacked whatever group she represents. They would have called a recoup on precedent, and any network that gave a due preference would be the laughing stock of the news. So our question is, what if the Tea Party was black, holding guns like the Black Panther Party was back? If Al was Rush Limbaugh and Jesse was Sean Hannity and Tavis was Glenn Beck, would you harm their families? If Sarah Palin was suddenly just a soldier, would you leave it to the voters and go and get the soldiers? Y'all know if the Tea Party was black, the government would have been had the army attack.
Everything that is getting pushed through Congress, including this health care bill, are transforming America. And they are all driven by President Obama's thinking on one idea: reparations.
There you go. Kind of hard to take issue with his thesis, isn't it? Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
I had my button hit wrong. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
I am calling because I was just, I have never turned off somebody, a program, the way I did yesterday.
What?
When O'Donnell started in on his ambush, and that's all it was. Was an ambush?
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was disgusting.
I mean, I was like you. My jaw was on the floor, and I finally just said, "I'm not going to listen to this. This is just crap." And I punched the button, killed the TV set, because basically he wasn't doing anything as far as imparting information. He was just screaming.
You know what? I don't know that I have ever seen anything on TV, Susan, that I could say compares side by side with Bill O'Reilly. I saw it last night. That was Lawrence O'Donnell went right. He jumped the Bill O'Reilly shark.
I wouldn't say Bill O'Reilly. I'd say Rush Limbaugh.
It's a question of degree. But I saw it as Bill O'Reilly because he did everything except yell, "Shut up! Shut up!"
Well, that's true. That's true. But, you know, I literally did not see all of it because I killed it. I wouldn't sit there and watch it, and I have no intention of ever watching that program again. They can do without their, you know, somebody watching their commercials.
Yeah, if they got to have him, then they don't got to have you.
Yeah, I adore Rachel. I adore Keith, and not because they agree with me all the time, because about half the time they don't. but because whether I agree with them or not, they're rational.
Yeah,
this is.
I sat and watched Keith's special comment probably four or five times, just because it was so informationally dense. It was packed with stuff that I wanted to make sure that I processed.
I didn't find his source for the numbers for where he said the people making $20,000 to $40,000 a year would be having their taxes raised?
Well, no. There was a New York Times story on that, Susan. What that has to do with is the expiration of making work pay, that tax credit.
Okay.
That expires, yeah. And the tax break does not make up for what that was saving. So it winds up being a net increase on families making less than $40,000 and individuals making less than $20,000.
Yeah, and what kills me is also that, and it's nothing more than a time bomb, in the Social Security.
You mean the tax holiday?
Payroll tax.
Yeah.
Yeah, the payroll.
Some holiday.
That's the wedge they're going to use to take down Social Security.
And
they're going, eh.
Yeah, it's hard not to see that and think, you know, only Nixon can go to China.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Don't get me started on Tricky Dicky. I tend to yell.
Well, no Republican could ever get away with killing Social Security. The only way Social Security could ever be damaged was if, fatally damaged, is if a Democrat did it.
Yeah, and it looks like they're trying to get one to do it. That's why I was all over my congresspeople, my congress critters today. If you have to give in on something, fine. Just make sure that the one thing that absolutely has to come out of that bill before it goes through is that payroll tax cut. That has to die.
One of the things out of this that's most disturbing is the fact that the Democrats who rebelled today largely were rebelling, Susan, over the estate tax stuff. And granted, it's odious, it's obnoxious, it's disgusting, but...
Well, that's why I was calling them up, because to make sure that they, they didn't miss the Social Security thing while they were being distracted by the estate tax thing.
Yeah, and I think that was well taken that you did that.
And I'm urging other people to do the same thing. But at the same time, I was also one of those people who called up my congress writers and said, I'm one of those people that would really get hurt. Let the whole thing die anyway.
Did you get a response or just thank you, I'll pass it along?
Well, let me put it this way. Congressman Wu, he doesn't make, much noise. But he very quietly signed on to that letter that said, no way, Jose, this thing ain't getting past me in the House. And it was one of the things that gave Nancy the cover to say, okay, this thing's not coming to the floor.
Do you expect that? I mean, okay, let me ask you then. What do you expect the outcome of all this to be?
I figure sooner or later there is going to be a compromise. It's a question of how odious it is. And I want to make damn sure it's that payroll tax reduction is not in there, because that will kill Social Security and disability. Kill it deader than a doornail. Because the next thing you will hear is, well, the trust fund's in trouble. We need to privatize it.
That scares me more than anything else.
Yeah. Now, for something to make things a little bit brighter, little change of subject.
Okay.
You know what a flash mob is?
Yes.
Okay. There was up on YouTube, there is a variation on a flash mob. An entire chorus Corral Group anonymously went into a food court in Canada. And what resulted was one of the most magnificent renditions of the Hallelujah Chorus.
You know, I saw something like that in a that took place in a European airport.
No, this one's not in a European. No, this one is. This one is just this last November, and it's if you Google, if you type in on YouTube, if you type in Hallelujah Chorus in food court at the same time, it'll pop up. It is Meg, you know, religious or not.
Well, it may, you know, I was just thinking, Hallelujah Chorus Food Court, I may actually be able to get all of those letters into, because right now I'm crippled for N's and B's. I can't type the letter N and I can't type the letter B.
How come?
Because of whatever it is that's wrong with this computer.
You still got the virus.
Oh, yeah. I worked last night and said, you know, if I keep this up, we gotta go to the hospital in the morning, which means B, I won't get this finished, so I stopped.
Yeah, and C, it sounds like you're on the verge of having to do the big nasty.
No, I'm looking at a wipe, and I've been trying to make plans along those lines, and I just dread it. I dread it because I'll lose some data that I desperately don't want to. Susan, have yourself a wonderful evening tonight, dear, and I will go look at the Hallelujah Chorus Food Court after the show.
Well, give my love to Doodle and tell her I hope she's feeling better eventually.
I certainly will. Right now, I don't think she's feeling any pain. We're ahead of the pain right now. That's important.
That's important. Yes, it is. Give my love to Agnes, too, to everybody.
Sure will. You take care, Susan.
Bugs, call your Congress critters, people.
Yep, keep up the heat. Thank you, Susan. Yep. Bye now.
Thank you much. Bye, darling.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
What we experienced was not a compromise, people. Here's an example of a compromise, Bob. Bob, would you like to go to see the movie Tron Tuesday? And you say...
No, I can't go Tuesday, but I'd like to go Wednesday.
Exactly. This is what the Republicans did. They said, this is the deal we're giving you. We're going to give you 13 months of unemployment benefits, and then in 2012, we're going to ask you to jump off a cliff. Could you please sign?
That's the best. I heard Rachel Maddow's cheese pizza analogy the other night, but this one's even better.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, I understand what people are talking about when it comes to Obama and the Democrats, and there needs to be some what they need to do because they're the blue dog Democrats, and there are all these different factors. But here's the important thing, Bob, and this is something that we need to learn to do even more steadily than ever before, because we need to learn where this 2% cut payroll tax and who inserted that. We need to learn where the origin of that is. And I know where that's from, people. That's the important thing. I know where that's from. That is from Congressman Ryan's Roadmap to America. And basically, what it is it's basically a roadmap to destruction of all social services. And he pretty much spells it out on his site. If you go type in Congressman Ryan, Roadmap to America, you'll see all kinds of graphs. And you'll see what he inserted was this. What they inserted from his Roadmap to America was basically had to do with the 2% cut in the payroll tax. And he proposes diverting this exact amount from Social Security payroll tax into privatized accounts. And he's been on the road constantly pushing this.
Oh, that's sickening.
Yes. And that's the problem. So what we should be asking is I would like to see someone in the private chamber ask, do you support the Roadmap to America, Mr. President Obama? And show him the plan and see what his reaction of that is. Do you find this a positive thing for America? I like how someone put it on the blog site. They said Does anyone seriously doubt this item in the deal when lowering taxes on workers could have been accomplished without taking a Social Security payroll tax hostage is not the first step on the cat food road to perdition?
And you expect that to happen when?
What I'm saying is that if we go along with these deals, these are the things that are inserted in it, and it's just
right.
It's not a deal, people. It's a trap. Good Lord, it's a trap.
Well, the extend it for 2 years, and I'll oppose it then. There's not even any elegance in that trap. How's he
right.
supposed to run for president in 2 years? On no, really, we'll repeal the tax cuts. That's political suicide.
And you know, here's the other thing. It's what a lot of people aren't paying attention to. Is say, well, we got to take the deal, and running and scrambling and all this. Yeah, when Obama said when he talked about he has his own read my lips, no new taxes with the regarding the poorest of the poor being taxed. Through a back door.
But?
You know, that's the problem. The problem is that... Here's the issue, people. Politics is a contact sport. I know you don't... I know you say Obama has to act cordial and he has to act bipartisanship and all of that, but we live in a sports society and people pay attention to this. And if Obama doesn't make any move regarding any kind of aggressive nature regarding this deal, they're going to remember it. And they're going to remember it when they go to the voting booths, and they're going to remember it when somebody calls them up and says, hey, you think you could kick in a donation?
Yeah, a lot of those $5 ain't going to be there.
Right, that's the point. They're not going to be there. And if you look at the polls right now, how many people are, most Americans say they're worse off under Obama, poll shows. And the reason is you're having this constant bombardment of this economy is the worst economy that you've ever seen. And it's all.
Oh, I know. And if we try to say, and who made it that way?
Yeah,
what's the response there, David? Oh, well, we can't play the blame game.
Yeah, we can't play. Or Karl Rove's favorite statement, we're not going to play politics. You're playing politics no matter what.
Yep.
I love that statement. We're not going to play politics.
By the way,
Sandra
just dropped me a note, and she said, Congressman Ryan was cited by Obama as someone he can work with.
See? That's my point exactly.
And all Congressman Ryan is a retread of Newt Gingrich. He's Newt Gingrich down a couple of wives.
You know.
But you know he stands up there and he reads from the paper and he's got his necktie properly dimpled,
right.
And everybody's oh look he's a smart Republican. Horse hockey. There's no such thing.
And you know the interesting thing about all of this is the fact that when you look at what's happening right now, and this is the problem, this is the problem that we face, and this is why. And I hate to say it, people, but it's not for my benefit, and it's not for Bob's benefit. The reason why Obama has to act aggressive is because the public demands it. Okay? We live in a contact sports society. If you don't like that, I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
The right wing has defined it that way.
Right.
That's how bullies define themselves. I am aggressive, therefore I am better. And the thing is, the only way you ever break that circle, the only way that you ever stop that sickening downward spiral is by refusing. Well, first you have to get up in their face once, and then let them know that it doesn't work, and then you can begin to talk. But you have to bloody a bully's nose at least once, or he will never stop being a bully.
That's the point. And, you know, and the other thing is we can't negotiate with extortionists. That's what this is. This is an extortion. Anyone talking about, well, we have to sign it now because people need unemployment benefits. What are you going to do in 13 months? What are you going to do after the next 13 months? You going to keep doing that? They're not going to keep...
No, this is a gun to a head. This is give us all the money, or the poor people get it.
And you know, and I know, Bob, and everybody listening knows, and a few of the Obama apologists listening in the background know this too, that they can change that deal anytime they want through backdoors and tricks and bullshit, basically. That's why we need to stand up, people. That's why. Not because somebody's angry at Obama or we're gonna punish the Democrats who don't play nice with the professional side of the left. That's not why. It's because you have to eventually.
If you don't stand up once, you're going to keep getting knocked down. I think I said the other night, if you don't understand bullies, you will always wind up being bullied. And that's just, you know, it gives me no, I'm not trying to be profound.
Right, right, right.
It just happens that I grew up with redneck bullies.
And you know, the other thing before I go, the last thing before I go, and people say, well, that's not going to help us win. Don't you get it, people? You have to get in the training mode. You're going to lose so many different rounds. Just like a professional boxer. How many fights do you think Tyson lost? How many fights do you think Floyd Mayweather lost before you ever entered that ring? This is training. Understand that. And it's time to start training now. Not 2012, not 2014, now. Take your losses now.
But for God's sakes, get in the ring.
Exactly.
David, thanks a million, brother.
All right, later.
Later. David, calling from Maine, who started out as our pop culture critic, pop culture correspondent, and has expanded his brief, as it were. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
First, my regards to your daughter and for a quick recovery from her surgery today.
Thank you very, very much. There's a surgeon over in Somersville who appears to be quite competent with these things.
Well, thank God for that.
Amen.
You know, there's a lot of good information that's been disseminated through your program tonight. There really is.
Thank you.
Very glad that you drew the line in the sand on that guy earlier.
It gave me no joy, but it's one of those things. Once that crap gets started,
it's nothing but a form of bullying, as far as I'm concerned.
You may very well be right, Jim.
I think so. And as far as Washington is concerned, people just. Maybe they're beginning to understand exactly what goes on inside the Beltway.
It is every bit as Byzantine as any complex royal capital in Europe.
Well, I mean, you know, Washington produces no wealth at all. It basically distributes wealth, and it distributes it in many, many arcane ways. As we've discussed many times before, whether it's to K Street, to Wall Street, or wherever, that's where it goes. And it's lately also continuing to become a drainage from the people who need it the most, or the people who need the social programs and the things that Susan was talking about.
Exactly. Exactly. And, Jim, I want to ask you a question because I sort of invoked your name the other night. You were talking about the government shutdown, and you were working in D.C. at the time when Gingrich and Clinton stared and Gingrich blinked. And you said, no, everything didn't stop when the government shut down. Could you go back over that ground, please?
No, it didn't. I mean, we received a 10-day furlough with pay, and... I think on one day I went up to the Hill and watched some of the debates on it, and basically the programs continued to function, checks continued to be printed, and federal offices were closed, but I mean Social Security checks and veterans checks, things of that nature.
The VA hospitals didn't shut down.
No, they didn't. There were government offices closed, yes, but not hospitals and things of that nature. And
first-line critical services such as that.
Right, right. As a matter of fact, even though at the time I was involved in a very, very serious project with the Air Force, and I went into the office. I had to go home.
Just couldn't stay.
That's right. Only essential military personnel were allowed to stay. Civilians were not. So that's what happened during the shutdown back in 94, 95. And it was it's a sad thing when the Congress cannot pass its own budget and they can't do their job. And right now we're operating on a continuing resolution.
Right.
Now they're talking about extending that continuing resolution for another year.
Just because they've got a pretty good idea of what can be expected out of the Republicans.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're basically holding the country hostage because they will not because they cannot, do the jobs they were elected to do.
Okay, now, next question. How much, and I'm talking, I guess I tend to focus on the Republican side of this, Jim, but how much of it's cannot and how much of it's will not? Because it seems like it's a whole bunch of will not from where I stand.
Well, I think it's on the right side of the aisle, basically, because they want to hold, as you said, the poor people hostage who are on unemployment, and they want to place a gun to the heads of people who are in desperate need of unemployment benefits and things of that nature.
And yet, you know, one of the things that I found telling was the quote from John Boehner at the end of September, where he said if that's the only alternative he had, eventually he would vote to extend unemployment. And yet this giveaway comes along? What is that, Jim?
Bob, if I knew, I wish I could give you a definitive answer that would answer your questions. But I'm just not real sure that I can make a positive statement on that question. I'm sorry.
Well, I understand, because it perplexes me just as much. I don't know, and maybe it's such a case of high papa lorum that I just can't get it. But I don't see where you're negotiating from strength when you begin the negotiations by excluding the people who, for the next 3 weeks, still hold a majority. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, you know, in my opinion, and maybe this is just completely off the wall, and of course I've been off the wall many times before, and I'm not particularly proud of that, nor am I ashamed of it, but it's of the Congress, by the Congress, for the Congress. You will note in this latest bill that they passed, this bill Obama, to cut out all raises and things like that, Congress is accept. Or has been accepted from that particular rule. And they're going to vote themselves another pay raise next year. You can guarantee they will. And it's, you know, this who raised for me into hell with you attitude that a majority of them have. Now, this recent action by the Democrats for Obama, well, I think it's too little too late. I mean, they've made a statement.
Well, I think they've put themselves in a worse position. I hate to say it because I applaud them for having some spine about them, but at this late date, it makes them wear the unemployment issue, as you heard it argued this evening. But, you know, going back to the negotiations, Jim, if you have a potential negotiating partner, and that partner has been nothing but trouble in your attempt to reach some level of consensus, I can understand leaving those people out of the negotiations. In other words, well, who has said no, hell no? Well, that's John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, right?
Yeah.
So what did they do to entitle themselves to a seat at that table?
They took it.
They took Barack Obama's peanut butter sandwich and his milk money, didn't they?
That's exactly what I mean, and he gave it to them, too. You know, I know.
And the thing is, once having capitulated to a bully, Jim, does the bully say, well, that's enough, I know you're paying attention now, so I won't take your milk money anymore?
No, he's not going to leave you alone when you're at recess or when you're in the bathroom.
No, he's going to come take that milk money every daggum day.
That's exactly the attitude these people have, and they realize they've been successful with it, and having been successful with this particular stratagem, they're going to continue to Democrats who simply won't fight, and they know they won't fight. Seriously. I mean, one of the first rules of war, according to Sun Tzu, is being able to gain the victory without having to really go to war or fight. And that's the strategy that they have used a long, long time. And this Roadways to America thing that you were talking about earlier?
Mm-hmm.
You know how old that is?
Well, if it's a Republican idea, it's probably been retreaded so many times that you can't recognize the original tire.
That thing is so damn old, they all put the music long ago. And I really don't have much else to say, except I do have this to tell you. I received a Republican Santa Claus doll for Christmas.
Yes.
You want to hear it?
Oh, yes.
Well, ready or not, here it goes. Just a minute. Let me get this thing sent. Like you're having problems, we all have technical problems, right?
Yeah, right.
Here we go. And that's exactly the message these people are sending to me.
And me as well. I'm sorry you kind of took my breath away for a minute there, Jim. I had to recollect myself.
And basically, it's called a Palm Beach Santa on vacation in Florida with a red doublet, Bermuda shorts, and when he bends over and breaks wind, there's a big tattoo on his ass. And that's exactly what these people have been doing for a long, long time. They've been dropping their shorts and just shooting me a great big moon.
The whole blessed country.
I hate to tell you, yeah. And as far as these people hating their country, well, they don't hate their country. What they want to do is remake their country in their own image. That's what they want.
And that doesn't bode well for you, me, or anyone who ain't them.
No, it doesn't. Not at all. Not at all. I mean, that's the reason I have referred to as Washington being the Forbidden City. It's forbidden to anyone who isn't an outsider, who isn't in and out on the mechanisms of how they can get these laws and things slipped into bills and things that will ultimately promote the interests of the wealthier classes at the expense of people who are the have-nots.
Well, Joe Manchin had to just make you proud as punch today.
Yeah, I did. As a matter of fact, I gave him a call.
Really, did you?
Yeah, I did. And I just asked him, may I see your DD-214? And what the hell do you know about serving in a line unit? What the hell do you know about unit cohesion, other than what the brass hats of the Pentagon told you? And what the, well, let's face it, the prejudice of your own constituency have told you.
Well, and that's the bottom line, isn't it?
Well, that's part of it, too, and I'm sure he probably, basically in his heart, feels that way. And, you know, I think don't ask, don't tell, as far as the repealing of it, that's a done deal. I mean, they will say, well, we want to deal with the tax issues and the cuts and this, that, and the other before we deal with that. The Pentagon has resolutely and will continue to resolutely promote DADT. And it's something that I'm just not sure what the real problem is, because it's been proven to be a very ineffective law. Other nations don't have this policy. Israel, for example, they don't have this policy. Other nations don't. And as far as chaplains are concerned, that's one of the craziest things I have ever heard.
And you can tell me if I'm wrong, but doesn't a chaplain of any stripe, I don't mean rank, I mean of denomination, have a military duty under the UCMJ or some reg or something or another to perform religious rites regardless, in extremis, regardless of a person's particular background?
Yes, sir.
I mean, if you're a chaplain rabbi E4 Mahmoud is over here in a bad way, your rabbi or your Roman Catholic chaplain has to go over and render service to the Muslim, right? And the same would go for a chaplain imam rendering aid to a Jewish soldier or a Catholic soldier or a Protestant soldier, right?
Well, they basically try to get a chaplain or someone who is a representative of a man's faith or religion. But, I mean, they have to provide as best they can. But now, you know, there's such a movement afoot that they're trying to even lessen the effect of that. I mean, when I quoted you that regulation the other day, or a couple months ago, remember I looked it up and we talked about it, and I read you the list of religions that military chaplains are supposed to provide functions for.
Right.
And, of course, that was still, you know, on the books. But, I mean, yeah, by law they're supposed to, and by DOD regulation and service regulation, provide as best they can for the needs of the particular service member in question. That's what they're supposed
to do. And all of that just renders what Joe Manchin did utter hogwash. Then.
Well, it's exactly utter hogwash. I mean, Manchin was just trying to get up there and be a part of, well, I hate to say it. I'm sorry.
And by the way, I got a note in from Sandra. You laid her low with your Santa.
I did what?
You laid Sandra low with Santa there.
Well, tell Sandra Merry Christmas, and I'm glad I did. And by the way, it went off by itself this time. Any vibration will set this.
Oh, Jesus!
Off.
It's got a motion sensor.
Oh yeah, it's got a motion sensor. It bends over. It does all kinds of things.
Oh, Rupert and Shady Lady, you'll have him going nuts all night long.
Well, that's what I have to reach over the bottom of his foot and cut him off. And wait a minute. Just a minute, Bob. I'm sorry. Let me cut this thing off. And I'll be off here. Good night, Santa. Good night. Good night. You need to go back there to the North Pole and take care of making those toys to get Rudolph's nose shined up.
But, I don't want to hear nothing about no nose shining.
Anyway, I forgot what I was saying. That sort of took me out of bounds, too. I didn't realize he was that sensitive. But, you know, the whole thing is just, we call them dog and pony shows or kabuki theater or whatever. But it's gotten to the point that it's just absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I'm sure Joe Manchin will get a nice little C Street family check in his stocking this year, aren't you?
Well, I've got another thing for him, too, and some of those other people. I've got a CD that's called Pull My Finger.
Of course you do.
And basically, when I get this, I'll pass this on, and this, that, and the other, when I call constituents, I'll start playing that in the background.
Dear God. Jim?
And I actually, you won't believe this, but when I was talking to some woman last week, and she was doing this to me, and I put that CD in and hit the carousel, she asked me, sir, don't you have some personal business you need to attend to?
Jim, have a good night, my friend.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
And for God's sakes, don't let the cats near that Santa. It's about 5 minutes before the hour. One last thing on this chaplain story. I want you to see how right-wing talking points get around. I didn't share this with you earlier because I was waiting for prayer meeting Wednesday. See how that works out. I had seen this earlier, but News Ninja Gene just sent this along as a reminder. I got one of those right-wing media PR pitches inviting me to have a creepy old filthy bastard named Ronald Cruz on the program. And he along with 65 other retired chaplains, have signed a letter urging President Obama to hang on to the filthy bigotry of "Don't Ask, Don't Tell." And it's as an evangelical, we believe that homosexualism is a sin against God, and it would keep us from being good chaplains. I was offered the opportunity to have this pink turd on my program. I, of course, did not show interest. But guess where this story comes from? This link that Gene just sent to me. Guess where? Come on. World Nut Daily? Wrong. Drudge Report? Sorry. No. American Family Association? Wrong again. Focus on the Family? Well, they probably got a story there, too. But no, this story, this link, complete with audio, comes from National Public Radio, who gave this BS issue the same gravity that it gives other, that it would give real news of pressing nature on Morning Edition. This non-issue by a non-active duty group of chaplains. The right wing are insidiously effective at the poison that they spew. So that's the program for tonight. Sorry about the technical issues. For those of you who have received emails from me during the program that contained neither the letter B nor N, well, that's just how it goes. I went over to YouTube trying to find that Monday Night Football clip of the announcement of John Lennon's murder. I don't have the letter N available for me, therefore I cannot type John Lennon. Sorry, but I do remember. I remember the night John Lennon died. Thanks to everybody who makes the program go. Thanks, first of all, to those of you who continue to support the program through your generous contributions. Head on RadioNetwork.com. The tab is Contribute, and there is a PayPal button. If your recurring subscriptions are not being pulled, I'm sorry. We've got a squirrely widget. But please go and have a look, and if you want to keep supporting us, it is sorely needed. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Thanks to Matt Osborne, OsborneInc.com, our southeastern correspondent. My head writer is David in Tennessee. John Fox is our chief engineer, as well as ever so many other things. Ben Birch makes all the streaming and podcasting and archiving happen at WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org. We also continue apace because of the kind and generous dedication to keeping the program going of the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you.